Powered from the Sereno Cigar Company studio in North Carolina and broadcasting from Euless, Texas, welcome to Primetime Special Edition number 59. Tonight, we welcome Alec and Bradley Rubin to the special edition side of the house. We'll talk Alec Bradley, Lars Teton, industry talk, and do a Live True segment. And as always, Special Edition is sponsored by Aganorsa Leaf. Great leaf makes great cigars. Aganorsa Leaf stands out because of the distinctive flavor of our Corojo 99 and Criollo 98 seeds cultivated by Cuban agronomists grown in the best lands in Jalapa and Esteli, Nicaragua. When you smoke one of our JFR, JFR Lunatic, Guardian of the Farm, or Casa Fernandez cigars, you will experience the unique taste and aroma that makes Aganorsa Leaf special. Smoke one in today and enjoy the signature flavor of Aganorsa Leaf. And by Regis Cigars. The Latin name Regis denotes of a king. Regis Cigars is a regal smoking experience to enjoy the handmade king of cigars. Gaius Petronius Arbiter was a Roman writer for Emperor Nero and devoted himself to a life of pleasure. Yet far from being an ordinary, he became known as an accomplished voluptuary. Showing capacity for outrageous indulgence, he was looked upon by Nero to be the absolute authority on questions of taste, a.k.a. Arbiter Elegante, especially with the science of alchemy. In his memory, we bring to you Regis, the alchemy of cultivating and blending the finest aged tobacco to achieve the best possible taste and even burning quality and elegant aromas. Regis invites you to be Arbiter Elegante, the judge of excellence of their beautifully handcrafted and flavorsome creations. These cigars are now available to the discerning palates of U.S. consumers nationwide. Ask your retailer for Regis cigars and become Arbiter Elegante. And buy Alec Bradley cigars. 500 cigars are set afire in this country every minute. A staggering statistic. Wait, that's a good thing. All those folks relaxing with a fine cigar. The trouble is, a lot of those cigars aren't worth remembering. They're just plain forgettable. That's why you should pick up an Alec Bradley cigar. You'll taste that baby and say, I'll remember you, Alec Bradley. Learn more at alecbradley.com. And I want to mention also tonight's featured segment sponsored by Cubanacan Cigars. As long as there have been people, there have been stories. From the stories told in paintings on ancient caves to the family stories shared around the table. Stories that make up our history and guide our traditions. Cubanacan Cigars embraces not only tradition, but strives to tell a story in every cigar. The name Cubanacan was chosen for its vibrant history and the story behind its meaning. Cubanacan means where the fertile land is abundant and is derived from the tobacco traditions that predate Cuba itself. The story of Cubanacan is not one of the past, but one that is still being written. Try the cigars that tell the story. The Cubanacan Connecticut, Cubanacan Habano, and Cubanacan Maduro. Well, welcome, everybody. This is Primetime Special Edition number 59 for this Tuesday, August 20th, 2019. It's Will Cooper. I am in the Sereno Cigar Company studios. I'm joined cross-country by my co-host, friend, and colleague, Mr. Bear DuPlessis.
Coop, good evening, sir. Good evening, good evening, good evening. It is so, dude, it feels like forever since I've sat across from you.
It has been. It's been about 2 weeks.
Wow.
It's depressing. It's depressing.
No, I know. Just so we can, we'll kind of update folks as the game's going on, but right now it's Phillies 3, Red Sox 2. Not confident that we're going to hold the lead, but, you know, Charlie's back. That's what's important, Bear. Charlie is back.
Yes, because all the problems can be solved by having Charlie Emanuel come back to that
clubhouse. There has never been a hitting coach that has an impact on a team like in the history of baseball and what we've seen in the last week. That team's completely turned around. That team looks like they want to play baseball.
Bryce Harper, Bryce Harper hits a walk-off in his first game back. I mean, that was pretty epic. You couldn't have written it any better, man.
Listen, here's the deal. It's a little bit of pixie dust. They're inspired to have him in the he hasn't magically waved a wand and made these guys better headed. We'll see what happens over the next couple weeks right now, but by the way, Aaron was the one who broke the news to me and I didn't believe him that Charlie was back. Go figure that.
You thought he was joking around?
I thought he was joking around.
You were pretty quiet on because I tagged you on. I talked to you on the post when I saw that it became official and everything.
Well, I was actually in a meeting for my day job, and then someone in the meeting confirmed it. So yeah, that's what happened. I was in the meeting, and then someone actually confirmed it. Like, hey, did you hear Charlie's back? I'm like, this is true then.
So what's more exciting to you, the fact that Charlie's back or when – like what will make you happier? The moment when you found out that Charlie was back or when the moment when they inevitably fire Gabe Kapler? Which will make you happier?
Oh, no, it's Charlie back. I mean, I'm the positive guy because he's the greatest manager we had in the history of that franchise. Beloved. And, you know, I never wanted to see him go. So if he can make things right, then I'll be very happy when Gabe Kapp was escorted out of Philadelphia. But Bear, I'll just say one more thing before we get into our guests. There are broadcasters in Philadelphia for who 9 years wanted Charlie Manuel's head on a platter. Even when they won the World Series, they were trying to run him out of town. These same guys have come around saying, you know what? It's the best thing. They were glad when they hired him back.
The devil you know is the better than the devil you don't, man. It's always the way it is. Man, you've had a shitty run of managers, though. Shitty run of, like, coaches, and two, like Ben McAdoo for the Giants, you know.
Yes.
I'm still in the camp that I don't think Gabe Kapler is as bad as you say he is.
Oh, my goodness.
But, hey, listen, if you want to swap my year with Bobby Valentine for a Gabe Kapler year, I'll take him, man.
Done.
That guy's a cancer.
No, I don't think so, compared to what we had.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
See, the problem, if you want to compare them, Bobby V is a cancer. Gabe Kapler's just a moron. You can fix stupid on occasion.
Yeah, that's true. It's harder to cure cancer, right?
Exactly.
All right. Hey, so let's without further ado, because we got a great show tonight. I want to welcome back to Primetime two great guys. Really glad to have them this time doing the Tuesday show. We have Bradley and Alec Rubin.
Wow.
No one ever says Bradley's name first.
Oh.
No one ever says Bradley's name.
Coop, that was amazing. Bradley will forever love you. That's the first time his name has ever been said.
I figured I was going to pull it up. I want to welcome you both back to Primetime. Alec, I mean, no, I hope you're not offended. I think you get first billing quite a bit.
Too much. That was weird. Yeah,
so Bradley's actually catching double props tonight because Alec hasn't accepted my friend request on Facebook. So I was able to tag Bradley, but I wasn't able to tag Alec. So
I don't have a Facebook.
Alec has no Facebook.
Oh, man.
Good for you.
Who the heck?
You're the wrong Alec Rubin.
Who the heck am I trying to friend request? Terrible.
I did get friends with Lars Teton, so I was really glad on that.
On which one of his 7 Facebooks did you become friends with?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't know it was 7. I thought I was on the Lars Teton's one.
I don't. There's a lot of them.
If you're seeing a lot of posts of bacon, then I'm sure you're on the right one.
Yeah, I think I've seen something with that. Yeah. No, but it's great. But hey, guys, welcome back. Great to have you guys. Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah, great to have you guys back. So, you know, we. I know last time I did the show with you guys, I was telling you before the show, I was in London. I couldn't smoke. And now I'm pretty pumped and I want to smoke as much as possible. So I lit up the Gatekeeper in the 60 size tonight. Awesome. So I haven't smoked this size yet. So I'm looking forward to it.
Hashtag Gordo.
The other 3?
What was that?
Have you had the other 3 sizes?
I've had, I think the Corona is the one I haven't had either. The Corona size, Corona Gordo, I haven't had either.
Missing out.
No, I will be. Yep, I have that as well. And then I have a Blind Face, and of course I have Lars.
Of course.
Yep.
Good.
All right.
Well, and excited to be back again. Thanks for having us.
No problem at all. Bear, real quick, let's just go around what we're smoking tonight before we start.
Well, hashtag our Gordos, our Vitolas too, Coop. So in your honor, I thought I was paying proper respect. I thought you'd be lighting up a Corona or a Lancero, you know. For me, but I can see how much.
I'm making up for the amount of tobacco I didn't get to smoke last time when I was on the show. I had them on the show.
So I'm actually smoking a Gordo too, just for you, Coop. Just for you.
Yep.
And I am smoking the Blind Faith. This is my first Blind Faith. And so I'm really excited. I've already a few puffs into it. Got some great initial flavor. I'm excited to share this with Bradley and Alec tonight. We're gonna keep up the trend, Bradley and Alec.
Yeah. we're gonna start this thing. So, we're gonna start this thing, and then
we'll start here and end here. I'll tell you that right now.
Now, you guys are smoking. I see.
Of course.
Bradley's got an older Max Ego. Probably got 6 years of age on that thing.
Oh,
it's a 52x9.25. And I'm smoking a Gatekeeper Corona, which I'm pretty much halfway down for now. I have a couple other things lined up.
I got that's my cigar that's on deck, man. I got a Gatekeeper Corona, and then I've got a Lars Teton SS.
Oh, that's the one, man.
Do that next.
Have you tried that, Bear?
I'm scared to now, guys. Like, that's way too much. It's way too much excitement.
Yeah,
like,
no, yeah, smoke with caution. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's why it's good you don't smoke that one first.
On okay. deck for me, I got an old Select Cabinet Reserve that we don't make anymore as well.
Yes. I have a story about that cigar. Bradley's heard it.
I have.
If you remember at the party, yes, yes, this absolutely. Is a great one.
Not a lot at the party, but I remember that at the party.
So you guys are
when you're ready.
Yeah. I'm sorry. What was that? Got Barry. Were you gonna
go? I'll share that when he's ready.
Okay. Yeah. That's him. Oh, so you guys are at the Alec Bradley headquarters. Are you in the law offices tonight?
Yes, we're in the law offices.
Okay.
It's a Ruben and Lipson.
Okay. Awesome. So yeah, Dad was telling. We had your dad on a few weeks ago. He was telling us the story. He put you guys into the office there, and you guys came up with a very not the law office, you have to say.
Yeah. So now I share an office with Jonathan Lipson, and Alex's office is right next to us, and then has a little door hole, with like no actual door, so we can all yell at each other and be on phones at the same time and not be able to hear our conversations. So
especially because Jonathan Lipson always puts it on speaker, so we can never hear our own phone conversations. He's watching right now. That's why I said that.
I see him out there. So guys, before we kind of get into, you know, your decision to get into the family business, where did you guys go to school and what were you guys studying in school originally before you kind of thought about getting into the family business?
So I started off at University of Central Florida for 2 years studying business. And then I transferred down to Florida International University down in Miami and ended up graduating with a degree in sociology.
Nice.
Pretty similar, actually, UCF, but stayed there for all 4 years and graduated with a degree in business management and entrepreneurship. So pretty similar track.
Yeah, but I remember we were talking last time because you did mention that because my son went to Full Sail.
Yeah, right down the street.
Yeah, but and that's where he partied all the time was at UCF, he told me.
The drinks are quite cheap out there, so it's always fun.
Yeah. So did you know when you were in school that, hey, you were going to go back and join the family business, or was it after school when you said you were going to go join the family business?
So for me, I think it probably was about senior year that I realized that this was what I wanted to do. I took that time to see if there was anything else. But all throughout my 4 years of college, I smoked cigars and got all my buddies into smoking cigars. And it was just kind of became a little culture between me and my friends. And I decided none of my family realized that this was what I wanted to do. And when I graduated, they're like, what are you going to do? And I was like, I'm clearly, like, obviously going to work at Alec Bradley. Like, I thought that was pretty obvious. And they're like, no, we thought you were probably going to go do something else.
Well, that's because you never voiced it. You never voiced the fact that you wanted to come into the business.
Yeah, I just figured that it was pretty obvious, and they didn't apparently realize. So, it probably wasn't until about senior year, but you kind of realize how great the industry is and what it's done for me and my family. So, what I could possibly do in the future is, that was really what made me want to be a part of Alec Bradley.
Since you said it wasn't like something that you like verbally said out loud, what was that moment for you, Bradley, that we were like, yeah, this is it for me. This is what I'm going to do. Was there an it moment?
I wouldn't say that there was an it moment, but by the beginning of my senior year, when I was like, okay, now, I'm about to be graduating soon. It's time to figure this all out. And I just kind of reflected on my years past in college. And I was like, this is kind of the.
Did they freeze?
Yeah.
They may have froze. They were having an internet issue earlier on right now. So we'll give them a couple of minutes. I know the internet was not cooperating with them earlier on. As we speak. So
a follow-up question I'm going to ask for Alec when he gets back is sociology, Coop, is something, a subject that's always kind of fascinated me because it's the very general study of human interaction. Psychology is very much more personal a little bit.
Right.
But sociology is very, is a little bit more general.
And I want to say, psychology is like inside the mind and sociology is how the mind kind of acts. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's more like group associated. It's more groups of people,
right? Right.
Kind of like anthropology as well. It kind of sociology, anthropology kind of somewhat go hand in hand typically. So that'll be an interesting follow-up for Alec that I had for him. So the, you know, it's kind of interesting that, you know, like we hear so many sons that have, sons and daughters have gotten into this business, and they talk about how for a long time they fought it, and it really wasn't what they necessarily wanted up front or even the beginning. But, you know, it was so ingrained in Bradley, for example, that he just assumed everybody knew that that's what he wanted and that's what he was going to do and everything. So that was kind of that's kind of an interesting difference than you see in, you know, from other stories and from other scenarios.
No, yeah, no, totally. You get that too, as well, you know, where that's kind of a, you know, it's kind of, I guess, weird, you know, not weird, but I lost my train of thought. When, you know, I guess it's funny how everyone just assumed he was going to go do his own thing. And then, you know, hey, I really want to join the family business.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that's a little bit different than a lot of other tracks that a lot of other folks have taken. Like, it's not that I think a lot of,
there's still technical issues. It looks like.
It's not that a lot of the kids have, like, you know, hated the family business. I haven't heard that one where, like, they hated it and have turned around. I think it's that they wanted to do something on their own. And, you know, it was just a calling, man. It just kept calling back to some of these other folks and everything. So that's a really interesting path that Bradley's taken.
Yeah.
How's your cigar?
It's really good. It's really good. You get some really rich flavors off this Gordo is what I'll say. It's probably a little more dialed back than the other sizes I've had, but still very, very tasty right now. And I'll stand by, this is not, it smokes different than an Ernesto, Perez Carrillo Jr. cigar, which is the factory that they're working with, and it smokes different than an Alec Bradley. I mean, I'll stay by that as well.
That was something that was kind of the consensus when we had all smoked that blend. You know, I haven't smoked the Gordo yet in the Gatekeeper. Just got my first one, but I have smoked about three of the Coronas, and I'm going to be smoking my fourth one tonight. Just a really fantastic blend. So,
yeah. I just heard from Jonathan Lipson, who's he's the director of marketing for Alec Bradley. He's trying to find out what's going on there. So just for folks who are tuning in, we did lose Alec and Bradley. They were having some technical difficulties in the office prior to the show. So please stand by, and we appreciate folks' patience here as things go on here. So we will adjust and adapt as need be. And then the score is still the same in the game right now. But this is your first time smoking Blind Faith, right?
Uh-huh.
So let me ask you a question. What was your initial reaction to that cigar when you kind of started puffing on it?
I was really impressed with the spice and the how pepper forward it kind of was, but not like overly aggressive. Like, it wasn't like overly so. It was just it was something that caught my attention. Like, when sometimes with cigars that even that are peppery and spicy or can be even pepper bombs, they take a second to warm up. But there's some cigars that are really, really great that, like, from the first light, they capture your attention. Similarly to the way that I think that the, like, Espinosa Habano, for example, that I'm a fan of, the way that you light that up and that kind of that spice hits you, which is really interesting. So, I mean, if I had to guess, there's, and here's the honest to God truth about this group. I don't know anything about this blend. But if I had to guess, I'd probably guess that there's probably some Corojo in it, cause of that pronounced pepperness to it. There's a really nice, the wrapper's really kind of got some nice leather, earthy, rich tones to it. But it definitely doesn't smoke like, it definitely doesn't really smoke like any, I mean, it has some similar characteristics of other Alec Bradley cigars, but it has a unique spin on it, if that makes sense.
Is it, do you think it's a stronger cigar than you've had out of Alec Bradley?
It's kind of hard to tell in a Gordo.
Yeah, that's true.
But if I, The petite Lancero coil is got a lot of spice. I wouldn't say strength, but it's got a lot of spice. It's got a lot of pepper to it and spice. The Tempest has some flair. The Black Market has some flair. I would put it up there for sure.
I think I told this story when they were on the last time, and I think I told Alan Rubin this story too. When that cigar came out last year, Alec Bradley was sending out some pre-releases to some of the retailers. And I happened to be with Craig Cass, and he said, hey, give this cigar a try. And it was the Blind Face. It didn't even have the final packaging on it yet, right? It didn't have a generic band, but it had like a prototype band. It didn't have that final band on it, but it wasn't like a typewritten band either. And I lit this thing up, and I'm like, it was like strong. I mean, it was, but this was a Robusto size. I mean, it was kick-ass strong, right?
Right.
Like, what the heck, right? So it was way too strong. I took it home, and then I went back and smoked it again. I still thought it was a stronger blend, a little more pepper forward as far as that blend goes. But I was like, and we'll get into it, it was a very different Alec Bradley. Even though that was coming out of Racist, Cabanas, which is the factory they work with. I was very impressed with that cigar.
Like I said, I absolutely know nothing about this blend. So when the boys are able to rejoin us, I kind of want to see if I get any of my guesses right, because I honestly don't know anything about it for sure. So,
just for folks who are tuned in, the internet up their back, they were having internet problems.
Yeah, I just had to go to my phone. So there we go.
You guys really.
Yeah, we're a mess. I've been told that.
We're going to say ingenious, man, because pulling out all the stops.
Oh, God. One sec.
Take your time there. We're talking with Alec and Bradley Rubin. We were having some technical difficulties from the law offices down there, but they have gone to a plan B, which we are greatly appreciative to right now. So please stand by our audience right now. Yep, and Alan, Dad has said they may have lost power as well, but it looks like they have light on in there. This happens, guys. It's technology, and there's nothing we could do sometimes. Or, you know, when the power goes out or the internet goes out.
You got to check the score, Coop. You're happy. It's fine.
I don't know, but it must be something. They may have a little bit of that Terrence Riley jinx going. Because remember, when I was in England, I was having – that's when I had the connection issues. I couldn't get – there was no internet. There was no internet. And I'm calling Aaron in a panic from England. I'm like, Aaron, we got these guys coming on. I don't know if I could do the show.
Well, we're back.
We switched offices.
Yeah, so we're good now.
All right. So you're out of the law offices right now. I appreciate it.
We're showing the law office, but just a different one of the law offices.
Yep. Okay. So we were talking about some of the getting into the business, right, Bear?
Yeah. So Bradley was just finishing up his thoughts on like when he didn't really have an it moment, but it was like going into senior year and he was getting ready to get started and everything. The follow up that I wanted to ask you, Alec, was sociology is a subject that's always fascinated me. Because, you know, the study of, you know, it's a lot more interpersonal than obviously psychology is very personal. It's always, it's about the mind, but yeah, sociology is.
It's a study of people, essentially, yeah.
So, I mean, that has to work really well, you know, from an academic standpoint, but even in practicum with this business. I mean, because you're dealing with all different kinds of people, multiple cultures. I mean, it's had to serve you well, hasn't it?
Absolutely. I took a lot of interesting classes that actually really helped me now in this business, such as, you know, economic geography and, you know, learning about colonialism and all that kind of stuff really has helped me a lot in this business and understanding how people work. And it's definitely been something that I've been able to use throughout the years, which has been nice.
Great question.
Yeah, very nice question.
And another question I had for you guys is we could probably be here all night. Literally, if we were to sit here and you were to list all the things that your father, Alan Rubin, has taught you guys about this business, about life, it could be endless. But the question that I was interested in asking was, in the short time that you both have been in the business, what is one thing that you've taught him?
Oh, wow. How to be funny. That's for sure. Everything that he's learned in terms of his comedy comes from his son.
Wow.
Alec.
So I know he's listening to that one.
Wow. You. There you go. You know, it's interesting because, you know, I talked about this with your dad. There's like, and we were down in the office last year, Aaron and I. I mean, there's a vibe in your office. There's a chemistry in your office. You guys have fun in that office, it seems like. I mean, we were having a ball there. So I always thought, you know, it was just very natural. And I was telling your dad, I like how you guys have been doing the videos in the office right now because people are seeing what Aaron and I saw when we were down there back in November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's just part of the Alec Bradley culture and family is we're all very serious about what we do here and we all have an important part to play. But if we can have fun while doing it, that makes it even better. But at the end of the day, you know, we want to get down to business and we want to have a good time doing it.
And the funny thing to me is a lot of people that I meet tend to think that we're a very corporate company, but you saw firsthand when you were down here, that is not the case. And when people say that we're corporate, it kind of makes us laugh a little bit because that is not us.
You know, and that was, I'll be honest, that was what we had interviewed you guys on the show, so we had a little bit of a preview. But I remember your dad, when he was coming in the office later on, I was like, okay, it's going to get very corporate probably. It's going to get very serious. And it didn't. It was just as loose and flowing the rest of the day. And then obviously, if you folks saw the show with your dad back a few weeks ago, and I was, you heard, I was pretty nervous because I said, if one thing goes wrong, he's going to be really pissed at me, right? I was the most wound up bear. I was more wound up than in the DR that night.
Oh, man. That's intense.
Yeah. So
I can't imagine why.
Well, because again, technical difficulties, but the technical difficulties, you know, you just don't, you know, you don't want to have them. So it happens though sometimes, but it's good here. So we were just kind of talking before you guys lost the power, and we were just talking about Blind Faith there. So Blind Faith was your first project, right?
Yes.
Which of you two came to the other brother and said, "Hey, let's do a cigar"? Was it both like an aha moment you had it, or did one go to the other brother and say, "Hey, let's do this right now"?
Actually, Bradley came to me, and I had already been in the business full-time for over 3 years at that point. And Bradley came to me and said, "Hey, I think we should come out with our own cigar." And I kind of chuckled and said, "Okay, let's talk about that." And everything after that got pretty interesting pretty quickly, but obviously we moved forward with the idea and are extremely happy that we did.
Right. When we had you also on the show and talked to your dad last time, this was, hey, you guys aren't just going to put your name on a cigar here. You guys are going to have a role in the development of this, the branding, the blend, and the brand, the stake in the brand.
Yeah, I mean, we don't plan on going anywhere anytime soon. So as long as we can start early and learn as much as we can from the beginning, it's really only going to help us in the long run. So that was really the whole idea is, you know, coming into the business, finally get to work with my brother and my dad. And this is where we want to be forever. You know, we want to be at Alec Bradley and have Alec Bradley for as long as we can. And that was really the whole part was my dad said, you guys can either be Alan Rubin Sons or you can be Alec and Bradley. And that was really the first step in being Alec and Bradley is making our own cigar and kind of creating our own path.
I know your dad also said, as far as the brand goes, you guys have a stake in that brand too.
Yes, we are. Yeah, we both invested into it. That's why it was such a limited production up front. We could only afford so much and we were only allocated so many pairs of rollers. So,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, for this first project, you went with the factory that really has been synonymous with Alec Bradley over the years. It's the Raíces Cubanas factory. Yeah. What was like the first step? Did you guys go down there and start what was that first step when you decided you were going to work with that factory?
Well, we had already been down there before and we had already been playing with blending and all that stuff. But we went back down once we decided it was that we wanted to do the project. And that's when we really seriously got fully into blending and trying to figure this out. And I think we went through from start to finish either 30 plus different or also iterations of blends until we got to the final blend. And I think it took us a full year from the time we said, okay, let's go, to the time that we released the product. And that is a fairly long time, a full year to release one product, but it was our first one and we wanted to make sure it was everything it needed to be before it released.
And just to add to that, you said that Bryce Cabanas is pretty much synonymous with Alec Bradley. So doing the first cigar with them, Blind Faith, was because they are synonymous with us. They are like family to us. They produce most cigars that are known to Alec Bradley smokers, most cigars that we've gotten rated by Cigar Aficionado, so Prensado and Tempest and Coyol and Family Blend, Sanctum, all cigars that have come out of Rice and Cabana. So to do something with them is because of what they've done for us as well was really an important factor.
And that's not at all to discount the other factories that we work with, because we're currently working on projects now with the Placencia family, which is hopefully we'll be able to release soon.
Oh, wow.
Wonderful. Fantastic.
But you guys have worked already with – I know you guys have done some stuff with Placencia in the past, meaning Alec Bradley has, right?
Yeah. Alec Bradley has done a ton with both Placencia and with Bryce's Cabanas. So.
Right.
But we're – obviously, and then with Gatekeeper, obviously, we decided to go in a little bit different direction with that factory, but that was a very fun experience as well.
Sure. Now, with Blind Faith, I was telling a little story about when I think I told you guys when I first smoked it, it was very, very strong, right? Yeah. Craig Cass had given me a sample. I remember when I got, like, the press information on that cigar, and I'm looking at it, and it had the atrocious the Troy Hitchbine.
Oh, don't ruin it, man. I was going to guess.
Okay, I'll let you guess. Go ahead.
So when you guys were having technical difficulties, he was asking me about my opinion about the cigar. I'm about a couple inches into it now and really enjoying it. And what I was saying, that there was some initial spice pepper, like right off the light. You know, it's even like pepper bombs sometimes. This isn't a pepper bomb, but even pepper bombs sometimes have a tendency to take time to warm up a little bit and get that. There was an immediate flavor right off the light and everything. And so my hunch is, because I really don't know anything about this blend, my hunch is that there's probably some Corojo in here, because it's got a really nice pepper aroma. And then there's some really nice coffee, retrohale, which I get off a lot off Corojo. There's a really nice, like overall from the wrapper, there's really nice earthy and leathery texture to it and flavor. So I probably would guess that I think he ruined it, but I was going to guess a Honduran wrapper of some sort. So I right or wrong on any of that, I'm probably going to really embarrass myself.
No, you're absolutely correct. There is you're pretty spot on. There's Corojo and Criollo, both in the blend. It's a Trojes wrapper from Honduras. It's a Honduran Nicaraguan binder, and then three different Nicaraguan fillers.
You know, and I remember when I looked at that blend, right? Alec Bradley, the Trojes wrapper and the double binder, they're like signatures of many of your cigars. And I think I was talking with you that particular with that wrapper. You guys have done with that wrapper what no one else has done. But what I was surprised about is the blend that you guys came out of was something we hadn't seen anything from Alec Bradley like before. This was a bolder blend. And I thought it was, like I said, it was very strong when I smoked it, but like a few weeks later when I smoked it again, it had a boldness, and it was really, kind of like, wow, this cigar made a statement that I hadn't seen before, and it was showing an influence on another side of Alec Bradley we hadn't seen before. Hey, you guys can really put out a nice, bold cigar.
The difference with this cigar versus maybe the Alec Bradley's is we really concentrated, obviously, on the wrapper binder, but on the filler, we did something a little bit different. And there is Ligero and Maduro in that filler that you think would really make this thing extremely robust, but it just mellows it out very nicely, actually. And that's the flavor that you're probably getting from that cigar.
Yeah, it was And, you know, the reaction that you guys got from that cigar, you had to be very pleased. You had to be very pleased with that.
People could have scoffed at our first cigar that we came out with. And maybe some people did. I'm not really sure. But a lot of people were really pleased with what we did. And we're extremely happy with what we did, but we're always looking to get better. So,
I mean, for like I said, a rookie effort, so to speak, that was a very, very good cigar. And I know we've talked a lot about the packaging of that cigar too. You guys came up with just about the whole concept with that, which was really a great thing.
Yeah. I mean, I got to give props to Bradley on that.
I mean, first of all, back just to the blend, we have a lot of great people that, help and have been teaching us, obviously my father and our vice president, Ralph Montero, and then people down at the factory. So we have a lot of really helpful and people that are been doing this for a long time there to teach us. So we're very lucky to have them. And then in terms of the packaging and the retro-ness and Blind Faith, which, you know, obviously I got a lot of the band, the Blind Faith and the Eric Clapton references and all that stuff, which was a whole lot of fun. I really just wanted to do something that was fun. I think that's something that sometimes gets missing in cigars sometimes. So to see something that maybe reminds you of, your childhood or some sort of nostalgic, memory, whatever it may be. That was really the mindset behind the whole old TV and the SMPTE color bars and the test check in the background, because that's what I remember in the 90s was those things growing up. So I wanted to add something from our past, while we were growing up, into our first project.
And your dad told me the brown tie, though, was his idea.
Yes, the brown tie was the most stressful part of all the packaging. A blue tie and a brown tie, and he, for whatever reason, I don't know, it's such a small little detail. And I was getting on a plane, and I think I was texting Alec and my dad, and they're like, we need to know right now, like, brown tie or blue tie, and I was just like, just do the brown tie, because that's how we usually dress, so.
Right.
That tie decision took 3 weeks. I'm not joking.
Really?
Yeah.
It's very unnecessary.
Yeah.
I liked it. Like I said, when I was growing up, and I was wearing ties out of like my first job in college, Reagan was president, and he brought the brown tie back into style in the late 80s. So it was kind of, and I'll be honest, I didn't notice it on the packaging until your dad pointed it out when he was on the show.
Yeah, that's the thing. We know no one would notice except for us. But it's just those. That's how my dad is. Our dad is wired, and how we're wired is does the flow of the art, does it take you to the right place, and do you notice everything? And ultimately, no one's going to notice these small little details, but it drives us crazy.
We scrapped entire projects because the artwork did not feel right. More times than I care to admit.
And a lot of times we hear, that sometimes we how many brands you hear because of the artwork that sometimes they'll say if the artwork doesn't fly, they'll say that's why the cigar didn't sell. And then they go back and scrap it and do it again. And then people say,
oh, there are many, many cigars that have been in the marketplace that may not have been visually appealing, but the cigar was absolutely kick ass.
Yep.
And it went away because of that. And that's hard. That's the hard part.
Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah.
Alan's in the chat right now, and he's saying we love the idea, it was all him, and if we hated it, it was all you guys.
Yeah.
So
sounds about right. Playing the blame game. Yep.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Phillies. If it's going good, it's Charlie Manuel's fault. If it's bad, it's Gabe Kapler's fault, right? All right. Bear, anything on the Blind Faith you want to hit too?
I'm just really enjoying this cigar, and I couldn't agree more than your assessment on it, Coop. I think it's absolutely fantastic. I have had the Gatekeeper, and I know we're gonna get into that, so I don't want to spoil my thoughts on that. But this is my first Blind Faith, and I am enjoying it exceptionally. I'm not just saying that because of the company that we're keeping at the moment. I'm really, really enjoying it. I think it's a really well put together blend, really well balanced. And just and it's a Gordo to boot, and I'm enjoying the hell out of it.
So. Gordo's a Vitola's too. I told you that all along. You know, while Blind Faith came out, I mean, I thought 2018 was a big year for you guys. The other cigar that came out at the show last year with the Blind Faith was Magic Toast, which I think was like one of the revelations of the show. It was a huge hit for you guys. Did you guys have any input into that project?
I did not. I personally had very little.
Okay. Because that also seemed like a very different type of Alec Bradley blend than we had seen in the past. Yeah. Not to say that you guys always made the same cigars, but again, I didn't expect that was a Maduro, and I just didn't expect that type of Maduro. It wasn't like any other Maduro I had in the market, and that just was. I mean, the success that you guys had with that cigar, you have to be really pleased with that.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with that. It is like completely different, and I think that's like that. We're going to try to continue to do is to make things interesting and put out, you know, different cigars with funky artwork. And it's, you know, I think Alec Bradley's headed in a really good direction right now. And my dad all at the reins right now, just leading the company. So him and Ralph did amazing with Magic Toast. It's doing unbelievable for us right now. So we really couldn't be more proud.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think our only input was we were actually down at the factories and we smoked that blend. Not having a project behind it, and both Brad and I both said that's a good blend, and that was about the extent of our input.
what I thought was really important with these two cigars is there's a lot of great and unique cigars that you guys have in the portfolio. Coil, I mean, just a great example of a cigar. Yeah,
best cigar ever.
Oh, it's amazing. So Matt Booth got me hooked on that cigar. I think I was telling you, Inner Lancero Bear, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's the very best size in that blend. Hands down.
Yeah. And it was just like that cigar was just and I loved the wrap box packaging on that cigar because to me I just love packaging like that. But that cigar was just for a vintage single form vintage cigar, great cigar. I mean, just what I liked about it is these cigars that you came out, the new ones, I think were a great gateway. Not to steal the word ahead, to kind of rediscover some of these great cigars. Retailers maybe got away from Alec Bradley or something. Hey, you got these great cigars, but hey, we got all these other cigars too, and it was a great way to reintroduce some of those cigars to some people maybe who had not been introduced to them before.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was part of all the fun when I finally got working for Alec Bradley and getting to do Blind Faith and now Gatekeeper was to bring some of my own ideas to the table, and you know, people seem to really be accepting of what I had to say, and I really think that where we're headed right now is very, very good for the entire company.
Yep. So let's talk about Gatekeeper. We've been kind of alluding to it. Give us this was kind of going to be project two. I think we had all sense that you know you guys were going to do some more work. You caught us all by surprise when this project came about. We didn't expect a cigar. We didn't expect this cigar. We didn't expect where it was coming from or the project. So take us a little through the timeline of how this started.
Go for it, Brett. Yeah, so it all kind of started around Cigar Fest. Ernesto happened to be in our booth talking to my dad. And after they were done, it looked like they were talking about something important. So I definitely did not want to interrupt. And I was like, Dad, you're friends with Ernesto? And he's like, yeah, we go way back and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I love his cigars. Once I got into the business and started smoking everyone else's stuff, a couple of his blends just wowed me, the main two being the Dusk and the La Astoria. So I just kind of fell in love with the EPC line. And I know that's not the story for most people. Usually they got started with the La Gloria line. But for me, it was EPC. And after that, I asked my dad, I was like, do you think you'd be interested in working on something together? And he's like, yeah, I'll talk to him. And, you know, there were some talks here and there after a bit. Next thing you know, Ernesto hits number one cigar of the year. My father calls to congratulate him, and he's like, you know, what do I do now? And my dad's like, you know, just focus on Encore, focus on your brand, make sure, you know, what kind of happened to us doesn't happen to you, and stay focused. And he's like, well, I really want to work on that project with Alec and Bradley. And my dad kind of, you know, turned his head like, you know, really? Like, kind of one of the biggest moments for your company, and you still want to work on a brand with the boys? And he's like, yeah, absolutely.
I think we had already gone down for a meeting and had already started talking about blinds and stuff like that before they hit number one and before that conversation took place. But once he did hit number one, Brad and I thought there's no way he's still doing this project with us, but he still wanted to do it, which was very cool. Yeah.
Was it an important step for you guys to kind of sort of step out of the, not out of the family business or necessarily out of, but out of its shadow, you know, and to kind of, this is obviously a completely different segue that you guys took by going into the DR, partnering with Ernesto that, you know, it hadn't been done by your father's company. Was this really something that you kind of envisioned all along, or how important was it to kind of take a project of this, of not to use a word from the last cigar, but of this kind of leap of faith into a project of this nature?
Yeah. I think that was kind of the whole point with the Alec and Bradley lines, is to hit a segment that maybe Alec Bradley doesn't touch. People that maybe have stopped smoking our brand or was never really interested in our brand. So we wanted to do things that are more about us and who we are. And part of that is also providing cigars with different artwork and different blends from different places. So we don't have a premium cigar that comes out of the Dominican Republic. So we wanted to be the first ones that do it in the company, and why not work with a man more legend than Ernesto Perez Carrillo, given the opportunity. I mean, you guys have talked with so many people. I'm sure you've heard stories about other manufacturers, you know, going to Ernesto and making blends with him. And that's where it really all sparked from. So getting to work with someone like him is unbelievable. I mean, he's a legend.
To add to that, it really was an opportunity for us to step out of the shadow of Alec Bradley by going to another factory. I've known Ernesto for a while, not all that well, but I think I met him around when I was like 18. And so I had met him many different times. And Bradley actually came to me saying, I think we should work with Ernesto. And I brought it up to him a couple times. I know my father brought it up to him a couple times. And he was always interested and really wanted to do something with us. And he likes the whole idea of the next generation kind of thing. So he was completely in it. And not just that, the weird thing is that when you really look at it, Bradley and I versus Ernesto really have nothing in common except for the love of tobacco. So that's what was also very cool about the project to us.
You know, Coop often jokes around with me. Sometimes I get, you know, kind of starstruck or a little butterflies in my stomach when I'm talking to some of these folks, including the gentleman that we've been talking about today. I got the opportunity and the privilege of interviewing Ernesto at the trade show this year, which was just awesome for me. Growing up in the business, like you said, Alec, you had the opportunity to meet him when you were younger and everything. Does that ever happen to you guys? Do you guys ever get intimidated or, you know, starstruck from some of these other folks that have, you know, that have kind of like the legends in the business, like much like your father is?
All the time for me. All the time. I mean, I think the only one so far was Ernesto for me. Just because he was someone of more of a higher status like that, who I also fell in love with his brand. So he's probably the only one. And then other people, I wouldn't say starstruck, but just more excited to meet for sure.
Did you know, I know, like I'll say this, Bear was pretty much, when Encore came out, consistently, he thought this was going to get the number one cigar from Aficionado. He really loved that cigar, but he was calling it right till the end. I mean, when he gets a number one cigar, that's a big deal that now he's taking you guys on right after that. Like, hey, that's gotta be like, I mean, yeah, that's a big honor.
Yeah. I didn't think he would do it after.
I thought the project was going to be next. I thought I was going to be done.
I didn't think we had a shot.
And he's got a good memory, Ernesto, too. He'll say sometimes he forgets little details about the blends and stuff, right? But there's little things that I could tell you he remembers, too, just from me getting to know him. So that was great that he remembered that project, and it wasn't just like vaporware. It was like this was something real. So how soon after they got number one did you guys get to work on this?
I think I mentioned before, we actually had a meeting with them prior to them getting number one.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it already started, but barely. I mean, what was going to be an hour meeting turned into, a 4 or 5 hour meeting the first time we went and sat with Ernesto, just because he is the nicest guy ever and will never kick you out. But, so we had started talking. We had one, 5 hour meeting, whatever it was, and I don't think Bradley or I thought that it was going to happen after that hit. We both were actually rooting for him to get number one as well. So we were very excited for him, but we also thought that once it hit, that probably wasn't going to happen.
Did you guys have a concept of what you wanted to do? You know, was it something that you pitched to Ernesto, or did you kind of pick his brain for some ideas with that?
I mean, I had ideas in my head, but you never know which different idea is going to end up being the right one. And ultimately, we wanted to pay homage to Ernesto for what he's done in the industry and what he's now allowing us to do within the industry, getting to work with him. So the Gatekeeper is really about Ernesto, which is how we pitched it to him, was we kind of want to do something for you, because we see this as a big, big deal for us, getting to work with him. So if we could pay, some sort of respect, and like I said, we like stuff that's kind of retro, paying respect to some old school stuff, why not pay homage to Ernesto and everything that he's done and what he's continuing to do with us and with his own brand, DPC.
In a sense, Ernesto is a gatekeeper, and that's how we kind of viewed it. So hence the name Gatekeeper.
You know, the rappers that Ernesto works with, they're kind of different than what you guys have worked with at Alec Bradley, if I'm not mistaken. And ultimately, you went with Ecuador and Habano. Did you guys have any Ecuador and Habano in the portfolio before that?
No,
I didn't think so. And it's a pretty common rapper, but I thought that was the case. Hey, this is something you guys hadn't worked with at Alec Bradley before. So it was kind of a unique opportunity there.
Yeah, I mean, Ernesto is pretty well known for using that rapper. We wanted to play to his strengths, so why not go with something that he's very familiar with, and use it for that exact reason. It's just a lot of the cigars, like I said, that I'm a fan of from his line use the Ecuadorian Habano, so it just kind of made sense.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. The interesting is a comment that we seem to receive a lot at the trade show was, a lot of people were surprised that they could taste the influence of us as well as Ernesto in the cigar. And a lot of people said it was a true collaboration because it wasn't so one-sided or the other.
I'm totally on board with that. I'm totally on board with that.
Exact same thing to me. So I'm going to give him credit on that.
I think there was a consensus that Gatekeeper was, in years past from the show, there seems to be like that there have been like this front runner of cigar of the show, like a cigar that really captured everyone's attention for the most part. And, my contention for this year's show, and I think Coop, you can feel free to disagree or agree with it, but there really wasn't like that one cigar. There were a couple, but one of the cigars that were kind of that cigar of the show was absolutely, again, not just saying this because we're talking to you gentlemen tonight, but one of those cigars was the Gatekeeper. Everyone I talked to, retailers, media alike, and even some other manufacturers, were really high on this particular cigar, and for good reason. Coop and I both really, really, really enjoyed it. I thought exactly took the words out of my mouth, guys, that I think that it really captured the essence of both of you as an identity and really made something very unique at the same time that was just a tremendous cigar.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Barry. I remember actually watching, your guys' show, the first one after IPCPR, and I believe, Barry, I think the term you used was Dark Horse Cigar of the Show. So, we really appreciate that. Hearing that is unbelievable for us because we're you know, in really good company with everyone else making fantastic cigars. So to be put on some lists with other people that have done amazing things is it's pretty good feeling.
Well put, Brad.
The reason why I lit up this Gordo tonight, Bear, actually with this one, is because obviously Ernesto is the godfather of this size. Like he didn't invent it, but he really, this is what his forte. And I'm telling you, if you're a fan of Ernesto, if you're a fan of his big ring gauges, and there's a lot, this blend really, and I'm getting into the middle of this size right now. This is just hitting all the cylinders right now. It's a great medium strength, medium body cigar. There's a lot going on right now, especially when you get some of the smoke going on the palate right now. Bear, I know you were talking a lot about that with Klaus the other night. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on with this cigar, and you get that nice smoke production you can get on this is really stimulating a lot of areas of the palate. So this big ring gauge size is very, very good.
Yeah, it's what Ernesto does.
Yep.
it's what he's known for a good reason.
Yep. Yeah, and what was you guys? You know, I always like I said I did like the Habano, Mike. I love that short run 2011, and that was one of my favorite ones that he did with this. This is as good as any Habano cigar I've had from Ernesto, and I think your influence on this thing is, it's just I think it's you know, and not that again, not saying Ernesto does a lot of duplicate cigars, but it's just again another avenue of innovation that you're able to find, and I think. That's why people are really pleased. And plus, in the end, it's delivering with flavor, which is the most important thing.
Absolutely. Thank you.
What Coop is secretly wishing and holding back from you guys is that he really wants you guys to release the Gatekeeper with Ernesto and the Texas Lancero size, and that would just make him happy.
I'm in,
life.
Man. I'm in.
We'll send a bundle to over to you, Coop.
Yeah. I'm in.
We're actually talking about potentially releasing a limited amount in another size. It might not be a Texas Lancero, but – there is maybe something else in the works.
Very nice. Very, very nice right now. So the artwork is, again, very unique. Let me see if I can hold that up. Very,
very. Tell us a little bit about the imagery there. The gold, very strategically placed. And then obviously the bust on it as well. So tell us a little bit about the imagery and what it stands for and symbolizes.
Yeah, like Alex said before, we see Ernesto as the gatekeeper. So we kind of just wanted to, we look back at some old references, some old movies, things like that. And when we imagine a gatekeeper, we imagine someone, someone gothic, something just atrocious and scary, but kind of beautiful. And I think that's what went into the artwork, the gold kind of being Ernesto, because, you know, I think everything he touches turns to gold. Number one cigar of the year, number two cigar of the year, I think number four cigar of the year. So the list kind of goes on. So hopefully, some of his gold rubs off on us and, maybe something cool like that happens for us.
Very, very, very nice there. Your father made a comment about Red Meat Lovers Club. I don't know if that's a tease.
I have no clue what that's a reference to.
Interesting. I want to make sure it was
your before the show that he was just going to comment a bunch of crazy things to keep your attention, Coop.
But he's actually doing it. I didn't know. I had to look to see which Alan Rubin it was. So. Yeah.
Could have been the other Alan Rubin.
Yeah. Santa Clara Alan is in the room as well. Just torturing.
Yeah. Papa number two.
Yeah. And he liked the gatekeeper, by the way, Santa Clara Alan. And he's got I'd say he's got a discerning palate too. So for him to say that, that's really good there. Great reception. When's the cigar actually gonna be shipping?
I'd probably say what's the date today? 20th. We're hoping for 3 weeks.
That's not bad. That's pretty good.
Conservatively, 3 weeks.
Okay. So it's a good kind of taking you right into September there.
Yeah. Yep. And I know we're not bringing it up yet necessarily, but our stuff started shipping last week, and then we thought we would have a nice little pause between before we had Gatekeeper start to ship.
Yep. No, that's good.
Give- just a final note on the Gatekeeper, just to give you an idea about how kind of widely well-received it was. So as Coop knows, and what we do in the retail shop that I work in, we have a staff picks of the month. Mm-hmm. And so inevitably what happens, the closing days of the month, especially if there's a really nice cigar that some of the guys are looking forward to picking as their picks of the month, they want to get in first. So they'll send the mass text out like, this is what I'm picking. And there was actually two, we have a very small staff. There are two guys that jumped the gun trying to pick the Gatekeeper, and our inventory director had to inform them, sorry guys, it's not being shipped yet. Sorry. better luck next time with that. But now with my intel, they watched the show though, unfortunately, but with my intel, maybe I can get in first this time.
If it wasn't live, you could have edited that out, but no, that's awesome that, you know, people are excited for Gatekeeper to come out. We're extremely excited for it as well.
Yeah, no, you guys definitely should be. And I think, you know, a lot of us, like I said, who are at the trade show, we got to smoke this. We're smoking it now. I'm smoking it now. But I think the cigar enthusiast is going to be in for a real treat with this cigar. Very exciting there. You mentioned Lars. So let's kind of get into Lars here. And we talked a lot about this with your dad, but I want to kind of look at it from your perspective. Tell us when your dad came to you about the idea of bringing in Lars, and what was your reaction back on that?
Oh, I was extremely excited. It takes us into a different part of the market and the industry that we've never been in before. My father started out with flavored cigars and kind of went away from that very quickly, and it didn't stay in our lineup after that. But it kind of allows us to venture into a new part of the industry that we've never been in before. And Lars is Lars, and until you meet him and understand who he is, you just won't get it. Or until you smoke the cigars, because when people talk about flavored cigars, they have a certain perception. But when you smoke a Lars Teton cigar, it is nothing that you ever thought it would be. Completely different. So we were extremely excited about that.
When you talk about your dad getting was started off in flavor, that was the line that he did after Bogey Stogies, right? It was what was the tagline? It was like none of the fat and all the flavor, something like that.
It was a gourmet dessert cigars.
Right.
None of the fat, all the flavor. You got it. Perfect. Yeah.
Any of those laying around still?
I've never seen them. Yeah. Yeah. And then he had another cheesy tagline for Bogey Stogies. The best bogey you'll have on the golf course.
Have you smoked Bogey Stogies?
Never found that out.
Wow.
Yeah.
No. Wow. You know, so with Lars Teton's, I admit, so when I started smoking, I maybe had it once or twice, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't have a positive or negative reaction with it, right? But I'm not, as Bear will tell you, I'm not someone who's against flavored cigars, but I think you guys hit it on the head. When a lot of us went to that media party, and there were two things. We met Lars, like you said, got to know who he was, which I had a very different opinion than I was expecting with that. Yeah. And then tried the cigars, which we had the opportunity to do. I get it. I totally get it now. And it was,
you were skeptical at first. I remember.
I was skeptical. But again, you know, like I said, maybe I had, you know, I hadn't really smoked the Lars stuff much, right? But I'm like, well, you know, are these kind of gimmicky cigars? Are they?
And don't use the G word.
We'll get to that later on. Okay. but then when, you know, like I said, when I know when we were there and we were smoking, I'm like, these are good, and these are really good. Like they're not aggressive with the flavor, but they really complemented the blends and allowed some of the complexities to shine. But the cool thing that I saw at the party that I observed was the Alec Bradley team was enthusiastically on board with this. Your whole staff was on board with this.
Don't get it wrong. They were all skeptical at first.
I'm sure they were. Yeah.
Everyone was skeptical. We ended up sending out samples for them, and call after call from them once they received the samples was, okay, I get it now. And that's when it all turned.
Yeah, and like I said, meeting Lars on top of that, I thought he was a recluse, like, 'cause we hadn't seen him for a while. Like, he, you know, the brand never went away, but no one had really seen him, so I didn't know if we were going to get this recluse guy. And here we get this guy. He's just a fun guy to be around, a super nice guy, talented beyond belief, and very enthusiastic about this product, of his product, is what I saw.
Yeah. I mean, going on my take a little bit, when I was in my old office, there was a metal skateboard just laying in my office, and it said Lars Hedens on it, and I didn't know what it is or who it is or whatever. And next thing you know, I see my dad has a Lars Hedens hat sitting at the top of his on top of his desk, and weirdly looking through our Dropbox photos, I see old Lars Hedens stuff, and so I keep seeing Lars. This is before we were even talking to him, and I see Lars Hedens. And I had to ask my dad, like, what is the deal with this Lars Hedens? And he's like, he's a creative genius. Like, and explained kind of the whole thing that he did in the, you know, the late 70s and 80s and 90s. And I couldn't believe it. So weirdly enough, you know, a little bit longer down the road. And now Alec Bradley and Lars Hedens are under the same umbrella.
Yep. And you know, the thing is, it obviously carried over onto the trade show floor.
Yeah.
The reaction was very positive, I guess, as the retailers came through the booth.
Oh, absolutely. We gave Lars his, as people like to call it, his cave, that he got to stay in, meet with people, play music for them, all that great stuff, explain the cigars, and it was a really positive experience. I think some people came in not knowing what to expect, and then by the time they left the Lars booth, they got it and they understood it.
I didn't get to go in the booth. Well, I did get a peek in there because the guard wasn't there when I got there.
The bodyguard,
right? But here's what that reminded me of, that back room, is I think I told you guys about, we were talking about my dad on the last show. And he used to drive a lot of the record company people. And when I went in there, it reminded me of those old record company offices. That's what it had that vibe, with just the room looked like a record company office when you went in there. It was really, it took me back there right away.
Yeah.
He used to take me up to the CBS Records offices, and I'd get to meet some of the executives up there. And
it was really cool.
So it was really cool to see that as well.
Yeah. And it was cool even seeing other manufacturers that used to smoke his cigars come in, just want to see Lars again, or you know, learn about him and see, you know, what he is and all that aspect. So it was pretty cool that people in the industry were excited.
Yeah, there were other manufacturers that waited over 15 minutes to get to see Lars again because they hadn't either seen him in so long or a big fan of what he did. And I thought that was crazy within itself, that other manufacturers would wait to meet Lars.
Yeah, that was a really, like I said, that's a really good thing to see as well. Like I said, a lot of us who have been covering this since like 2010-ish, this was really our first time we've had to interact with Lars, even though he's been around a long time. For us, it was in a way, it was like dealing with a newcomer, but there are people who go back further than us as well to do that.
Exactly.
And so, Coop, I know you've had the majority of them so far. Which one are you gravitating toward right now on the Lars line?
The SS.
I get it. It's just a different experience.
Yeah. The SS is the one I really like.
That's up next.
And that's the one you guys, that Cigar Dave grabbed, right?
Yeah.
So here's a funny story with that, right? I had my little encounter with Cigar Dave, as people know. And he was telling me about that cigar, right? We somehow got in Lars Hedens, and he was on board with it, right? Which I was even surprised to hear from him on that, right? And he was telling me about that cigar. And then I saw the video that he did with you guys when he actually smoked that thing. I'm like, wow, he was really telling the story about that, where, he grabbed that cigar. And I think he was caught for a loop on that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everyone at the trade show, and this is what I told everyone, it is the most interesting cigar you will smoke at this trade show. It's unlike anything out there.
Yeah.
Without realizing what I did, handed one to Juan Consell and did not warn him beforehand. And then he came over and motherfucked me a little bit for not giving him a fair warning before he lit it up.
Juan.
Juan's a good guy. Yeah, he's a great guy.
I probably should have warned him a little bit before I gave him the cigar.
Yeah, smoke with caution.
But I think that cigar, I mean, it threw everyone, like, so I smoked it. I knew about it already. I wasn't as caught off guard because I hadn't smoked. That wasn't the one I had smoked prior to that. So I kind of, but that was the one I was most interested in, and it was the one that really, you know, captured me as well. The fats also are pretty good. I've been liking a lot of those, and those all each have a different character as well, those fat lines.
Have you had the San Fuca?
That one I have not had. No, I did. I did have that. Yes, I did have that one. I had that one actually at the party.
Yeah, what did you think?
Really liked it.
I really enjoyed that one as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I remember when the cigars were out there, I was just talking to Lars about, you know, wait, which one should I smoke? And he recommended that one to me.
Yeah.
And it had a nice, like, what I liked about that cigar, that was when we really got a lot of the complexities of the of those cigars. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, it wasn't like smoking a sweet tip cigar is what I'm saying. This was like smoking like I said, he calls these conditioned. Yeah. And I just felt this was something really different as well.
Yeah. I think for the people that are watching, if you are skeptical on the Lars line, it is not like any of the other flavored cigars. It has its own unique characteristics in terms of the experience. So you really get both the flavor of the tobacco, and then you get whatever is added into it as well. So you get a very nice added ambiance, and just very, it just kind of molds together very well. And it's not so overpowering, and it's not everyone in the room is going to be able to smell it. So it's kind of its own unique thing within the industry.
And the cool thing about it is you can go throughout the line, and with some, if you want a little bit more flavoring, there's an offering for that. Or if you want something just nice and subtle that just really enhances the experience, there's that as well, which is very cool. And then there's the sweet and spicy that is like nothing else on its own. In its own place by itself.
Yeah, and I'd also encourage folks too, if you smoke one of these and it's not to your liking, don't dismiss the whole line.
Yeah,
because they're all very different. Even the fats, different. The fats with those fats are all really different too, even in there.
The thing is, like, Brad and I are purists, and we smoke, you know, regular premium cigars. And when we started lighting these up, we were insanely surprised.
Yeah.
And I think most people that have tried them so far have been.
Yeah.
I think you can speak to that, Coop.
Yeah, no, I could definitely too. And I remember I was talking to Jack. You know, Jack came from the cigar media. You guys hired him as a rep out at West, and he was totally on board with it. Like even before I had lit up my Lars Teetons that night, he was like, make sure you try this before you leave the party, is what he was saying to me.
Yeah. I think Bear's about to put down whatever he's smoking. He's going to light up that switch.
I think I have to at this point, you know. Like, I don't want to put down the blind faith, man. I'm really enjoying it, but the way this is getting talked up now.
I won't feel disrespected if you put it down to try the Lars. I will not.
Okay. The thing about the first Lars Teton cigar that I smoked was the Grass at the media event, and I think it was on the show with Aaron Koop that he was talking about, I guess, some of the conditioning that goes into it, some of the material costs like just like this obscene amount of money.
Over $30,000 for a quart of one of the material.
Now, I haven't smoked the Grass yet. I got to admit that. I haven't smoked that one yet. I have it. I haven't smoked it, though.
It's pretty good, Coop.
One of the more conditioned cigars, but has a great aroma and is a great experience.
And a Jonathan Lipson favorite as well.
Yeah, I think Jonathan Lipson has smoked more than
anyone has gotten to try yet.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Clearly, right. He's making a big bucks there.
Well, here I go, guys. I'm going to do the SS. Here we go. Yeah. Here we go. This.
So as Bear lights up that as well.
Noises from Bear.
Yeah, it has a. It will. There's an onset where you're going to get with that cigar.
Yeah.
How about you guys? What's your favorite of the Lars line?
I'm more of a Cubagua, like early morning smoker on the way to work with coffee. Nice and mellow and sweet.
Yep. For me, it's between the San Fuca and the sweet and spicy. When I'm just looking for a great smoke from the Lars line, I definitely go with the San Fuca. And when I'm looking for that sweet and spicy, just because that's something that, you know, when you're in the mood for it, you want it. That's something I got to grab.
What the hell?
Yeah, that's the usually the reaction, sometimes in a great way and sometimes in a not so great way, but it's always, you're always going to get that reaction.
All right, so guys, I grew up in El Paso, Texas, and so we used to call it candy, but it wasn't. All right, so there was this a brand called Picolín, but basically it was like a citrus and chili powder like seasoning that would go all over this candied mango, candied watermelon. That's what this tastes like. Not the fruit so much, but the seasoning. That's what this tastes like. The citrus chili pepper thing going on.
Just so you know.
This is cool.
There is Carolina Reaper, Ghost Pepper, Scorpion Pepper, and Habaneros on that cigar.
I believe it. Whew.
It's great. It's absolutely insane. Yeah. When I first tried one of the original ones, it's just too much. I'm not good with spicy, and I never have been. I had two puffs, and my mouth just could not take it.
By the way, that scorpion pepper is a key ingredient in the seasoned salt, by the way.
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah. So listen, for folks who are sick of rice and beans, okay? My wife made rice and beans. I'm not the biggest fan of it. I don't know why she made it, but I wasn't doing handstands over it. I stuck a little of that seasoned salt in there, and it does everything. It will make everything better. Like I was even saying how it makes McDonald's fries better.
Yeah.
Some of the large spice right there.
Yeah. That's the seasoning that I got from the media event, and man, that stuff on some salmon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And chicken. Off the chain.
I've been raving about it. It's the best seasoned salt I've ever had. And by the way, just for folks who know, we will have Lars on the Thursday show in October. I think we have him October 3rd or October 10th, but I'll put that out there for sure.
So is he nice music? That'll be fun.
Oh, you got to get him playing. So yeah, we were talking about this. I actually was, we were driving home from church, right? And I'm going to try to tell the story correctly. My wife said I didn't tell it correctly the last time. And basically, my wife and I each got new cars, right? Mm-hmm. She never gets to drive in my car, right? So she said, hey, can we take your car to church? We always take her car. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. But the deal is whose car we're in controls the music. So I had basically had Lars Keaton queued up on YouTube, and I put it on in the car. And my wife's like, who is this? She's like, where did you find this from? And I go, oh, that's Lars Teton. And she knew of Lars Teton because she does a lot of the editing of the articles for me. So she's like, he does music too. I said, don't you remember from the article, the picture? She goes, oh, yeah, yeah. And I was playing that on the way home from church.
When's he going to be on Primetime, Coop?
October. It's October 3rd or October 10th.
It'll be cooler by then. You should totally rock a pink sweater in honor of the guest.
I'm for sure going to have a pink theme in there. Yes, we will have something pink in there. But I got – Lars wears that – he kind of wears that sweater around his neck kind of look.
And the signature cowboy hat.
He literally told me he does it just to look like an asshole. Jokingly, obviously, but those were his words to me.
The videos he shot with you guys, he was torturing you, Alec, that day. He was walking around the offices that day. That was great that afternoon.
He enjoys that.
Yeah.
He definitely enjoys torturing me a little bit.
Yep.
We definitely have to talk about another aspect of the Lars Teaton cigars, because we can't let you guys off the hook. Tell me that you guys have the same effect when you guys look at all the labels, man, that there's just like so much going on. Like seriously, like you can have like an epileptic seizure if you stare too long at these things. There's just so much going on. The stimulation, the overstimulation from these labels just have to be.
Lars actually designed all the bands himself. And the pictures that are on the band are actually all of him throughout the years.
Wow.
Yeah. So we really wanted to keep as much original artwork and all the blends as original as we could from back then. So trying to find all that information was pretty tough.
There's a photo of him on the SS. This stuff, I guess, in very, very, when he was very, very young. He looks like a young Matt Mads Mikkelsen from Casino Royale in 007.
Yeah.
Yes.
Le Chiffre.
Yeah.
I thought that's who it was. That's awesome. That's him.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. Some people could not believe that, you know, some of the pictures were him. But it is, you know, unbelievable. It's something in its own.
Yeah, and I had a same a first the opinion of the busy bands. I didn't know if they were gonna work, right? Then I met Lars, kind of got to understand it. And then when I really started looking at these bands, they are very creative, and they took me back to like the 80s in New York, where you go into the Soho district, the Greenwich Village district. That's where you used to go buy all the import music. There was no internet then. We'd go into New York City and we'd buy import albums. And there were all these posters up around the city and around the record stores that kind of looked like this. Again, it kind of had that vibe going with it, which was really kind of cool, and I kind of thought about it.
Yeah, Lars is from New York, so that really plays into kind of who he is. So
yep.
all the yep. artwork is really true to who Lars is as a person.
Yeah, I think he's from upstate New York and ended up living in Manhattan for a lot of years.
Yeah, I could see it. I could definitely see it there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because this is so nostalgic for me, the flavor and the taste of it, man, I got to say that I'm enjoying this more than I enjoyed the grass.
Yeah.
And the Serie D, I smoked the Serie D as well.
The question is, would you smoke this again?
Oh, yeah.
I would absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to light it up. You got me, Mel. I want to light mine up next.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, man, like I said, it's very nostalgic for me. This is actually really nice. This is interesting.
Yeah, it's very unique. And it's kind of funny because if I was on a table, right, and I was going to pick a Lars Teton cigar to smoke, not knowing anything about it, this might be the last one I pick, right?
Yeah.
And it's the biggest. It was like the biggest revelation of the whole line there. Yeah.
I just want to point out, I'm on my third Corona right now, and Brad is still smoking that Max. That's 9 1/4 inches long. I'm getting there.
All right, Bear. Anything else on Lars Teton? I want to turn to one more thing on this before we get into a couple of the other topics.
So like just to clarify, when you guys, when your father was talking to you guys about the acquisition and everything and making Lars Teton a part of the Alec Bradley family, did the discussion always include having Lars stay on as a part of the identity of the brand and in a bigger part of the company?
Every single conversation included Lars.
Yeah.
In being in it. When my father originally met Lars, I think they were in the basement of a cigar lounge. They're supposed to meet at like 11 o'clock at night. Lars showed up at 2 or 3 in the morning. They sat for like 4 or 5 hours till the sun came up. And from that point on, my dad knew that he just, you know, was going to be friends with Lars for a long time. And then when this opportunity came up, and because my dad had always been a fan, he collected the skateboards, the hats, a bunch of the different stuff. He always wanted Lars to be on board in every aspect of it. Lars created the bands. He went down to the factories. He helped work on the blends to bring it back to, you know, the original as close as possible, and did everything from soup to nuts. So Lars is the conversation of Lars being being a part of it and staying a part of it was not even a question.
Fantastic.
Yep. There was another cigar that you guys came out with that I think was a sleeper. It came out before the show.
Yep.
And I think a lot of us were, I know I was really surprised. I saw it got a really high score from the Half Wheel guys, and I totally, I'm on board. That Project 40, one of the best values that's come out in 2019, without question. Tremendous.
Out of inventory right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's actually coming out of Jesus Fuegos factory.
Yeah. So you got the Brazilian influence in there. Yeah, you got some of the Brazilian going on in there.
Yeah, and that's something we haven't talked about yet. All of the Lars stuff also is coming out of Jesus Fuegos factory.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's been doing very, very well for us. I've been traveling the past 2 weeks out in New England, and then just got back from Wisconsin. And people have been doing great with it and been getting a lot of compliments. It's really an everyday cigar. So it's doing very, very well for us, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, it was, like I said, it was, it was something I think a lot of us who hadn't smoked it were really, really pleased with it as well. And again, a different type of cigar with more of the Brazilian tobacco influence that Jesus Fuego is known for.
Exactly, yeah.
Yep. By the way, Juan Cancel is in the chat room.
Love it. What do you say about the sweet and spicy? Anything?
No, I said I love the 80s. Yeah, I can't find his comment. Did he write anything? I can't. I'll have to see on that.
I think Juan's still living in the 80s.
I still live in the 80s. He loves it. I live in the past is what I've been told.
Renaissance man, Coop. You're a Renaissance man.
Yeah. So, that's like I said, I think it showed, and I love the whole concept of the Project 40 concept your dad kind of put on that brand as well.
Yeah. He always has something meaningful behind the Alec Bradley brands, and, that's just kind of how, you know, how we live our life. How he taught us growing up is really, you know, you control your own happiness and control your own future and how things are going to work out for you. Nothing is really by fate, but you control your own destiny. So,
which is kind of the theme behind Project 40.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's kind of an experimental series. And again, kind of experimental. You know, it was interesting because, and I know this came up with your dad too, all the releases this year did not come out of Racist, which was like a first for you guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really goes back to, like you said before, we're trying to do different things and continually try to make people interested and get excited. So part of that is trying different blends and working with different factories. And that's how we're going to continue to do it.
Very nice. Bear, anything else we want to hit in this segment?
No, man. I put that down for a second, not because I'm disliking it, just because it's a lot.
Yeah. But you know, the watermelon sweetness, you nailed it with that watermelon sweetness with that, actually.
It's
like, that was a sweetness.
It's very nostalgic for me. This is almost like,
but this is
crazy, man.
This is sweet, Bear, spicy.
Once you get about a third of the way in, the spiciness starts to mellow out a little bit.
Oh, I can handle the heat. That's not that. I mean, honestly, that's truly what I'm enjoying about it. It's just, I'm not gonna lie. I'm not trying to wax poetic or be too melodramatic about this, but I'm having an emotional connection right now, and I'm.
I love it. I don't think you've looked up since you've been smoking cigars.
I just keep looking at it. I'm having an enthralling experience here, guys. This is really fantastic. It really is. It's great. It really is. I'm blown away in so many different ways, and I'm truly having an emotional experience right now. This is really
interesting. Back to your childhood.
Oh yeah, man, it really is. I mean, just, you know, again, not to be too melodramatic or bring it down around this, but you know, like on the heels of the tragedy in my hometown just a few weeks ago and stuff, and you know, just been thinking a lot about home, a lot about my friends and family and stuff that are still there and stuff. It's just, it's taking me back, man, and this is, I'm glad you guys encouraged me to light this up. This is one for the books for sure.
Okay.
Good, man.
All right. Hey, Bear, can you do the sponsor thing here?
Absolutely. Which one are we doing?
Michael's.
Absolutely. Okay. I can do it.
Okay, great.
So we're going to take a quick break and, check in with one of our sponsors, which happens to be Michael's Tobacco. Michael's Tobacco, with just over a decade of ownership, Michael's has become the premier tobacconist for the Dallas-Fort Worth metro area and cigar patrons the world over. With two convenient locations in Euless, just a quick jaunt from DFW Airport, and Keller, Texas, Michael's Tobacco stands as a beacon for the Texas cigar retailer. Michael's was the very first cigar lounge in the state of Texas to add a full bar to its ever list of growing accommodations. Proprietor Mike Peacock is a former IPCPR, now PCA board member, and has now made Michael's a family affair by having his son Bob join the ownership force. Under general manager and master story Tracy Spence's leadership at Michael's, his self-proclaimed greatest accomplishment has been assembling, quote, the greatest team in the cigar industry. retail business, unquote, as well as build some of the finest relationships with the industry's most respected individuals, like our two distinguished guests. Inventory Director Jason Fields handles and maintains two of the area's proudest humidors, containing premium cigars for everyone from the everyday smoker to the most ardent collector of rare puros. Under Mike, Bob, Tracy, and Jason's example, they have enlisted a staff of Kevin, Austin, myself, Joe, and Solis, and Brandon to collectively boast over 80 years of combined industry experience. Together, they have brought together a true and blessed mainstay for their respective communities. Whether you're celebrating an anniversary, birthday, hole-in-one, or just a desire to relax, Michael's Tobacco will have the perfect cigar waiting with an exquisite beverage pairing and lively conversation. Visit michaelstobacco.com for more details and a calendar of upcoming events. Michael's Tobacco, not just a cigar shop, but the perfect blend of Texas hospitality and the days of yore.
Welcome back to Primetime Special Edition number 59. We have Alec and Bradley Rubin as our special guests here. Bear and I have now lit up the Lars Teton SS. And just a comment from Juan Cancel. He thought Alec gave you a gag cigar, hence me motherfucking him. Oh, Jesus. Anyway. there's a lot going on in the industry right now, guys, and we've been asking a lot of our guests lately to kind of weigh in on some thoughts here. So we have a few industry topics. Some of them, are obviously some things that are in the forefront. And then we have a couple of other things that are going on as well. I guess we'll kind of just get right into it. PCA, Cigar Con, what are your thoughts of that right now? What were your thoughts of the announcement and just how it all went down? And what do you think about it going forward?
For me, it's hard for me because do I necessarily think that CigarCon is the best option for, because I understand what they're doing. They need to raise money for the effort against FDA. I understand that 100%. Do I think CigarCon is the best way to do it? Maybe, maybe not, but I haven't heard necessarily any other options or better options that anyone has proposed at the moment. So do I think that it could be a good thing if it helps generate money for the fight against FDA? Yeah, absolutely I do. Do I think that there are some potential flaws with it? Yeah, I think that as well. But the main thing for me really is I want to see this industry survive and thrive. And if this is, the means to get that done, it makes it okay in my book, even though there are obvious flaws to CigarCon.
Do you guys think that one of the key cornerstones to the CigarCon specifically and PCA to a certain extent as well is more engagement all around, engagement with the retailer, yeah. Engagement with the consumer, education being the forefront of that to combat the FDA. And obviously funds from CigarCon will go towards that and everything. But don't you, my opinion is, and I just want to see if you guys have a similar opinion or disagreement in it, that this may not be the best forum for this type of level of engagement. There are other opportunities. There are 11 other months out of the year. There are hundreds of events throughout the year that are consumer driven and consumer based that might be a better stage for PCA to enlist that type of engagement?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you got that 100% right. We do this, like you said, all throughout the year, doing events and doing different multi-vendor events. So we really want people to come out to those events. We are at the now PCA where we are there to, work with the retailers and present new cigars and try and grow our business. And not all the booths are set up to work for consumer engagement. So it does kind of take away what we are usually there to do. But like Alec said, if this is what is overall best for the industry, and we don't know any better. We're just entering the business only a few years, so we don't have all that knowledge and what is the best for the future of this industry. But if this is one step into, fighting the FDA and working on legislation, then this is what we'll do. But I do agree that it kind of takes away from what we're trying to do, and we would like people out at all the other things that we are doing. But at the end of the day, the industry is what provides for all of our families.
Coop, if I may. So what we're doing tonight is an example of that engagement. While there are a lot of folks tuned in live for this interview that are, you know, there are some industry folks like your father that are tuning in, Juan Cancel, as we mentioned a moment ago, and some others. But most of our audience, a bulk of our audience, and a lot of people tuned in tonight are consumers, and they're receiving that engagement from two amazing, young, vibrant, second-generation brand owners. You know, what is your opinion on the role that online media or media in general has taken in this industry and can help and curtail that engagement that PCA is seeking?
You want me to take this?
Yeah, go for it. I'll go next.
I think that the media is a very, very important part in what we do. I'm sure before there was, you know, you guys and some other different shows, it would be hard to get that engagement. Not everyone is able to make it out to an event, or maybe they don't come to your part of town. So to have online media where we can,
did we lose the sound again?
I believe so.
Yep, they may have froze again. Okay, I think they're coming back. We lost, you guys froze up.
Oh, did we?
Okay, you're back. It sounds like you're back.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead. Talk.
Okay.
Bradley, you were going into where online media has been a way to connect to the consumer and has been in the past, and you were finishing your thought there.
Yeah. So you guys are, I think, a very important part in what we do. Without you guys, there's who knows how many thousands and thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, however, whatever the number is, that may never get to meet us if they want to, but they get to see who we are, through this part of the industry, through online media. They get to learn about new cigars and learn about the blends, and every aspect you guys cover is what we're trying to get our message out. So you guys do a lot of the things that we're trying to do on our own, which is get our message out.
And I feel that, just to add in, people like to be emotionally connected to brands that they enjoy. And like Brad said, maybe we're not in the area of, you know, a shop that someone might get, you know, might go out to an event, or they don't have the chance to go out to an event that we do. You guys provide a platform that no one else does. Like, online media provides a platform that nothing else does, that people are able to see who we are and, you know, maybe connect with us. Maybe they like who we are, maybe they don't, but this gives them the opportunity to really make that decision.
Is there a scenario, like, let's say there was a scenario where online media was not at the trade show next year for whatever reason.
Yeah.
What effect do you think that would have on the industry?
I think that would have a large effect on the industry, online media not being there, because you guys are spreading the word of what's coming out at the trade show. If online media is not there and you guys aren't, you know, you guys have your own shows before the trade show, and then right after, recapping everything that's going on, things that you smoke, things that you liked. If that's not going on, people aren't seeing what's coming out until they go to their local shop, and maybe their local shop didn't bring in everything that came out of the trade show. Maybe there's something they want to try, and they might find somewhere else that might carry it or whatever it may be. And it really gives them the opportunity to know what's out there and what they want to give a try based off your guys' recommendations or what you said about it. So I think it's very important that you guys are there.
I mean, you guys have followed online media probably back from your college days, right? I mean, so you guys were always on board with that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how I figured out what I was going to try. And I didn't have too many cigar shops near me, but when I was in Orlando, and when Alex was in Orlando, we would go to Corona's, and that gave us the opportunity to see what else is out there. Because especially at Corona's, there's a gazillion cigars, so how do you know what to pick besides going to online media and seeing what they're talking about at that time?
Yeah, and you know, you guys weren't always like that, though. I mean, you guys, it's really the last couple of years where I've seen you guys really step the game up in there as well. I mean, you guys have always been responsive to online media, mm-hmm. but it seems like the last couple of years, and it was a comment in the chat room, is the consumers love to put the face on the cigar, the name to the face, connect the conduit. And I think you guys have been really doing a great job of this the last couple of years, what we're seeing. And like I mentioned earlier, that whole fun side of the company and just, you know, people are really getting to know everyone now and Alec Bradley, which I think is great for us and for everyone who smokes cigars.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you guys were both at the party before the day before the trade show. And that was part of the reason that we wanted to do it, is because we see you guys as being such an important part of our industry, that if we could, one, do something fun, do something where we all get to hang out and smoke cigars and have a couple drinks, and, you know, show you guys how important that you are, and then just have a good time, it really is a home run for all of us. And while, like we just had, it is important for how important you guys are to the industry, and I know you've talked about this before on previous shows about interviewing while at the trade show, how that could, you know, some people are iffy on that, because it sometimes can take away from what we're doing. That's why we figured, let's have a party and let's let everyone have that time to interview and get all those things out of the way. So, you know, we can do what we want at the trade show, and you guys can have more time to focus on other people during the trade show as well.
Yeah, it was a very good thing that you guys did, because there was a fun party aspect to that, don't get me wrong, but there was also a lot of, you know, we were learning about these releases. Like I said, we were learning about the Gatekeeper. We were learning about the Lars Tetons that night. And the time was taken to that, which I think there was a very valuable, like, we wouldn't have gotten maybe 30 minutes in a trade show booth to get that type of attention. So it was extremely beneficial, I could say, from my point of view. I'm sure I could speak for others as well on that.
Yeah, cool. Speak for all, Coop.
Yeah. I haven't heard anyone I haven't heard anyone say this. Everyone was just raving about that party. And like I said, it was very generous what you guys did on top of that. But again, I think it was the interaction and the experience that it helped us do our jobs better.
We just wanted everyone to have a good time before, you know, we went to work the day before, you know, the day of the trade show. It was just a good time. It was relaxing. It wasn't serious. And I thought that there was a lot of great conversations that came out of it, and a lot of people really enjoyed it.
Oh, great.
Bradley, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you and I had an extensive conversation at that party where the impression that I got is you're a heavy consumer of a lot of media, not just online and everything. Not to keep tooting our own horns here, but you've taken in a lot. You humbled me by saying that you've even watched my show, which I was very grateful for and everything. Alec, I didn't have that same opportunity with you, but is that something that's kind of cross culture, Alec, that you engage and consume a lot as well? And is that kind of spread throughout the company as a whole?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Brad is definitely the one that pulled me more into it, because he was so heavily into it and I was a little bit further away. And Brad really pulled me into it, into consuming all this media and really getting to know that, you know, that side of the industry. And I love it personally. I spent a lot of time going through, I mean, I watched already an hour and a half of the 3-hour show from last week. So
a few more days, you'll have it knocked out. No worries.
Oh, no. That was just this morning. I watched an hour and a half of it before I got to work. I'll probably finish it tonight.
The fast food segment's going to be epic. We're going
to... Oh, God.
Yeah. Now, you guys, we've talked to you guys a lot about... we talked a little bit at the beginning of the show. You guys... Yes, you spoke a lot of Alec Bradley, but you guys... I know when we talked last time, you guys smoke a lot of what's on the market right now. You don't just smoke Alec Bradley. You guys are really the type of guys that go and try everything. It's the impression I got when we talked.
I think this entire humidor right behind me is full of other companies' cigars. I have a full warehouse, obviously, in the back. I can go grab whatever I want. I have another humidor here that has all Alec Bradley in it, but his favorites. Yeah, just all Coronas and Lanceros in there, basically. But
there you go.
Put a few Gordos in there.
I think everything in the humidor behind me is all other company cigars. And when I first started smoking cigars, when I turned 18, I spent a lot of time in my local shop, and I would kind of work for free, and they would unband cigars and have me try them. And that's how I developed my palate. So I didn't know what I was smoking. There was no bias toward it. and I got to try half of the humidor, and really that's how I spent my time developing my palate and learning that you got to smoke everything, because as a, you know, as a cigar nerd, if you're not smoking other people's stuff, what, you know, do you truly love do you have a passion for the cigars?
If I remember and understand correctly, Alec, your first cigar was actually a 601 Blue label, right?
Not my first cigar. That's the first one that almost made me sick. It was a 601 Blue followed by a La Riqueza Double Corona.
Oh, my.
And my head was spinning. My head was spinning that day.
Do you remember? I mean, it's probably been a while. What do you remember what your actual first cigar was?
Yeah, it was a Max Nano.
And yours, Brad?
A Tempest Lancero, which I did not really understand how to smoke a cigar. It wasn't natural for me, so it took me a couple tries, but Alec actually taught me how to properly smoke a cigar when he said, like you're drinking water out of a straw, just don't inhale the water, and that's really what made it click. But a Tempest Lancero that I didn't properly get to experience.
At least you started with the right Vitola, though, Brad.
You're
solid.
Exactly. Still on the hunt for those cigars, actually. Very much on the hunt for those.
Yeah. At the trade show this year, did you guys get a chance to try any cigars? Were there some things that impressed you guys out there?
Let's see. What did I try? I tried that new Trinidad.
The Espiritu?
Yeah, that was very interesting. What else did I get to try? There's a few things I tried. I just can't remember. There was a new Viaje this year as well, right? Or maybe it was like a international release.
The Chinese release?
Yeah,
China. They didn't release that, but the China cigar, yeah, Andre gave me one of those.
Yeah, that thing's awesome.
Yeah, and it was very good. I told him he needs to release it here.
Yeah, I'm gonna be annoying him for a box for sure.
Yeah, and there's pictures of it on the Viaje IPCVR article on Coop if folks want to see that China release. I don't know if he had an official name for it. It was just called the China release, I think.
I think it was like the Dragon or something.
Yes,
like
yes, you're right, yes.
Was that what it was? The Dragon?
It was something with that, but I don't think he can use the Dragon name here.
No.
And then I also had that re-release of that the Nestor Miranda.
The special selection?
I was really surprised by that cigar.
Yeah, I think I know it's a re-release. I don't know what they did to it. I thought it was a little bit beefed up from what it used to be.
Yeah.
And it was really good.
Yeah.
You guys need to try the new Don Lino Africas, man.
Yeah.
It's a completely different blend. Oh, man, that thing's off the chain. So good.
I'll keep an eye out. I think the only new thing I had at the trade show, not saying this because he's watching, but Sir Robert Peel for Protocol was pretty fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I did have that. That was great.
I was a fan of that. And then this past week, I was just in Wisconsin, and I saw Ricky Rodriguez. He gave me the CAO session, which I enjoyed. And I haven't tried it yet, but I'm very excited. The La Coalición Crown Heads, Miguel from Crown Heads gave that to me. So that's what I'll be smoking sometime this week.
Also, what was Espinosa's new cigar? I think I had that as well.
The Seis Provincias
MTZ.
Yeah, new release. MTZ. I had that also. Yeah. Junior gave me one of those, and that was excellent.
Yeah, that I haven't smoked mine yet. I do have it.
Try it. It was really good.
Yeah, no, and I liked the one they did last year as well. That and the packaging they did on that was really cool. It had the Cuban style doors on it.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, I had a lot more than I thought I did. Yeah. I'm sure there's more that I can't even remember right now.
Yeah. But for anyone that's listening, we talked about a lot of cigars, but smoke Gatekeeper and Blind Faith and Mars Cadence and Project 40 and Magic Toast, and then go try all those cigars.
And I would tell you, you'd be missing out if you don't try any of those cigars. Yeah, I mean, that's sincere.
Good plug, Brad. Good plug.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely encourage Endo. Juan, nice plug. Juan may be sober tonight in the room. This is a first.
I know, man. It's kind
of.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, I know. Exactly. Exactly. All right. Another thing that kind of comes up a lot is cigar scoring. Like, there's a lot made of cigar scoring. Yeah. What are your thoughts on scoring cigars? And do you guys pay attention to numbers? Are they important? Are they overrated? What do you guys think of that?
They're all of the above. Everyone has their own different way of scoring. As we all know, developing palates has the most confusing scoring of anyone out there. Still don't understand it.
But so. Everyone keeps talking about it, Brad. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And then half will probably, at least for us, has the toughest scoring. But
they do, yep.
But like you saw and said before, Coop, great rating on Project 40. So
they got that one right. I could say that. They're really good with that.
Yeah, so everyone has their own ratings. Obviously, we always hope for a great rating from everyone. Doesn't mean it's anything less coming from someone else. Whoever your viewers and readers and listeners are, they are. And they listen to you or watch you for whatever reason or read your articles for a certain reason. And ratings from everyone are definitely important for sure.
Yep.
Guys, just to keep it away from the very interesting, and we could again keep up a really nice dialogue, because I think developing palates is I love their scoring system because it does generate conversation. But on the 100 point scale, which is most widely used, and everything, and the quest seems to be for that 90 plus, right? That 90 plus rating is kind of what gains you notoriety and stuff. Where's the line for you personally, where you're kind of let down, so to speak? Like, is it where you're like, God, did they hate the cigar? Like, and the point of this discussion is, I had an interesting discussion. I write reviews, as some of the people may know, for Cigar Dojo, and one of the ratings I gave was an 88, which is a good score for me, and I truly enjoyed that cigar. And the comment to me right back was, you said you liked the cigar and you gave it an 88, and I was like, I did like the cigar and it was an 88. So what's the line of demarcation for you guys personally, where you kind of like, oh, they enjoyed the cigar, but or then now you're disappointed with the actual score? What's the line for you guys personally?
The funny thing for me is, you hit the nail on the head. For me, anything below an 88 means that they probably did not truly enjoy the cigar. Just my personal opinion.
Right.
At the same time, someone once said to me, I would love to see us get a 32 rating, just to see what kind of spark that would create for the amount of people that would have to go try something that was only rated at 32.
I've heard that from a lot of manufacturers on that.
Yeah, and I think there's two ways to look at the ratings, and you know, what, like you asked, Bear, you asked personally, you know, where's that line? And I would agree that somewhere between, let's say, like an 85 to a 90 is, you know, that person personally likes it. But to the people that are reading your reviews, if you score it below 90, then you don't like it that much. So I think in terms of the manufacturer side, because people are buying your cigars, or our cigars, based off your guys' recommendations, 90 and up is usually what's going to get someone to go up and be like, okay, I need to try that cigar.
I agree with that.
Fair point,
for sure.
Bear, I'm going to audible this one, and I moved the other one, kind of falls in with the next one. So that's okay. I've gotten word of this, guys, of a collaboration called the Glenfiddich collaboration. What's that all about?
All I know is I just heard something about it for the first time this week. So you must have heard something before I did.
Well, I'm hearing about it for the first time right now. So you guys both know something that I don't know.
Okay.
So we're not getting... not really anything I can speak on. Basically, what you just said is everything I know. So if you know more than me, feel free to share.
So this is not a project that you can confirm or deny is in the works?
I didn't even know it was in the works, if it is. So
I got some intel on this. That's all the intel I have.
From who?
I got to keep my sources. there may be a leak is all I can say.
We know it was neither one of you guys. We know it was neither one of you, but yeah. You know,
Bear didn't even know I was putting that question
I know
there.
Like, I was like, what's this about?
I love the idea though, so
I saw the Glenfiddich in your dad's office, so
that's actually something that we dabbled with probably 4 or 5 years ago, is potentially doing a collaboration with Glenfiddich. And it went out in the marketplace for, you know, trademark purposes, all that kind of stuff. But as far as I know, that's as far as it went. And nothing has come up really since, except I heard a little bit of talk about it potentially this week. But I don't know if it's necessarily a real thing or not. Just when you hear any news, Coop, just let me know so I can get it updated on within Alec Bradley.
You've been there
for 2 weeks. Okay.
All right. So it's not an Alec and Bradley collaboration then. This is something.
No, definitely not.
Okay.
If it was, I might have told him about it.
Okay. All right. Bear, anything we want to hit on industry topics as well? We'll get into the Live True otherwise.
I'm good.
All right. So let's kind of just one more word from our sponsors. Luzioni Cigar, deep in flavor, deep in your mind. We are not industry standard. Luzioni Cigars. So now we're going to get into our Alec Bradley Live True segment. And this is kind of what we do on the Thursday show, but given that you guys do the Live True segment on the, you know, we normally don't do this on the Tuesday show, but since you guys are here and you do the Live True segment for us on Thursday, we moved it over to Tuesdays here. And this is kind of where we take a break from the hardcore cigar talk and we talk about things not related to cigars. I remember last time we had a very lively discussion about air travel.
Yes.
That started a little bit of a phenomenon after that. Mm-hmm. The whole Coop Tracker thing actually came after that. So I thank you guys for that, because the day before IPCBR, I can say that the hashtag Coop Tracker was beating out the hashtag IPCBR19. That's how it caught on. So,
Shoes of IPCBR hashtag?
What was that?
Shoes of IPCBR hashtag?
Yes, and we have something with that coming up, right, Bear? I think with that.
Yes.
Yeah, we have. So can we hold that thought?
Yes.
Yeah, we do have something related to that, yes, in this segment. All right. So, so this is a little different. This is more of a rapid-fire type of questioning we're going to do tonight that could generate some pretty good conversation along the way. And we have like 15 rapid-fire questions. They don't have to be rapid. We don't have to go quick. We can spend as much time or as little time as you want on it. And what we want to do is we want to get to know you guys a little better. We kind of did this with your dad. Some of these questions we asked your dad, and some of these we didn't. So we'll kind of go through and hit some of these. So I'll start it off. And you guys each answer these.
Your volume went down for whatever reason.
Okay, hang on. How's that? Better?
Nope.
How's that? Bear, talk.
How's my volume?
It must be my phone or something. That's weird. My volume's all the way up, but my volume just happened to go down.
Can you hear us now?
Can you hear us at all?
We may be hitting the technical difficulties again. And now I don't hear them at all.
Yeah, their screen froze up too.
They're freezing up. So they're probably hitting a little bit of a glitch there. Bear, back to the SS. Did you notice the change that they talked about?
Yes.
I get this like nutty flavor that comes in the second half with this. That kind of a little bit of a creamy nutty flavor that mixes in. The spices definitely go down with this.
Yes, definitely so. But it's still lingering on the lips a little bit. But yeah, that spice level has definitely decreased quite a bit.
Yeah.
This is a really enjoyable cigar.
It's a fun cigar to smoke. It's a good cigar. Is what I'll say. And
I kind of put it in that same wheelhouse as like, you know, KFC, you know, Kentucky Fire Cured. You know, it's a polarizing cigar, but it hits the spot when you need that, when you crave that, when you need that, it's the perfect cigar to smoke. So, and this could definitely fit that kind of mantra a little bit, man. I'm really enjoying it. I'm not just saying it for the benefit. And
no,
guests are gone, so I could totally dog it right now if I wanted to, but no, I am really enjoying this.
They're kind of trying to get back in. It looks like I see them, logged back in. We got the blank screen there, so we'll give them a minute. Yeah, you know what's interesting is I really got the pepper on the tongue this time, which I hadn't got. I got it, but this time it was like really pronounced on the lip. So that one I definitely got it a lot more. But yeah, you nailed it with that watermelon flavor. That was I think we're getting them back here. So
very nostalgic for me, man.
These guys are going over, above and beyond here, so we really appreciate it. Apologize. You're back. Can you hear us?
Yeah.
I charged my phone right before I came, and it still managed to die.
Okay.
So we're back.
Okay.
Man, you guys are awesome.
No.
Well, this has been an interesting night, huh?
No.
Like guys, I said, these guys are troopers, man. Look at this. This is awesome.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thanks so much, guys.
Please, we're happy. We're happy to be here. We just feel bad that it's been getting messed up.
No, it's not that bad at all. We've had worse. Because the sound's okay. We're just losing you for a minute or two, like, but the sound's good and the video is pretty good, so it's fine.
Perfect.
The worst thing is when we lose the sound on the guest end. There's nothing worse. That's the worst, because we get so many people listening to the show. So that's always the number one thing if that goes. And this is newer technology we're using too here. Because last time we weren't streaming on Facebook like we are now.
Cool. We're back now.
Okay, so we got these questions. And I'll start the first one off. And it's your favorite movie that you could watch over and over and over again?
The Big Lebowski.
Good one.
Yeah, I might second that one. I definitely saw it before you, so you can't point at me like that.
Doesn't matter. I answered first.
That's a hard one to beat. That's a great movie.
I got totally hooked on Kahlua after that movie, White Russians after that.
Everyone does.
I had my first one after that movie, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it was and I saw that movie like a few years after it came out. I didn't see it in the movie, but it was one of those folklore movies that I finally saw, and I'm like, wow, this is a great movie. And it sometimes gets overlooked when you talk about movies like that. I agree.
And the second one's coming out.
No.
Yeah.
No.
No?
No.
They're not making a second one?
No. They did all those commercials where everyone thought they were making a second one, but
I thought they were.
It was really just a Stella commercial for the Super Bowl or something like that.
Oh, wow.
That's too bad, man. That was kind of exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You gave my hopes up there for a minute.
I know.
That's what I was told.
The dude abides. Yes.
Yep. Yep. All right. So we got a couple of big guys are both in sync with that one. All right. Let's see what this one now. Your favorite band.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a hard one.
Your dad was partial to some hip hop, man. That caught me off guard.
Well, I usually listen to like disco and funk.
Yes.
So like that's what I've been on for like the past, I don't know, year and a half, 2 years. But if you're talking about just like nostalgic band for me growing up was AC/DC. That was the best.
Killing concert. Me right that's now. That's exactly what I was thinking.
The best concert I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, you went to that one too?
The Black Ice tour.
That was fantastic.
I don't remember how old I was, but I listened to a lot of AC/DC, and I was just excited that they had come out with a new album while I was still, you know, in that era.
Yeah, for me, Foo Fighters is definitely a band that I absolutely love, and seeing them in concert was insane also at a pretty young age. So
you guys, Brad, you mentioned the funk and disco a little bit, and AC/DC certainly isn't terribly contemporary, but is there an oldies band that you guys are into, like say like 60s, 70s, maybe even 50s?
I mean,
on your iPod?
I mean, something I got those things like the Average White Band, like somewhat recently, and I don't know. I'm more focused on different songs that I just hear and I fall in love with, and then maybe I'll get into the artist. But right now the Average White Band is someone I've been listening to quite a bit.
I even like old jazz. I think Brad does as well. You know, some nice Nina Simone or something like that is always good to put on as well.
I want to go back to that AC/DC for a second. Bon Scott or Brian Johnston?
Brian Johnston.
But our question, Brian Johnson, I agree.
I'm happy that you agree.
You know,
what's going to happen if you didn't agree.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Bon Scott, nothing against him either. The Axl Rose thing, I kind of would have questioned, to be honest, because he's been filling in for a while for Brian Johnson.
Yeah.
I'll date myself in age. You know the song that he had, Big Balls? You remember?
I don't remember that song personally.
Well, you go listen to it. It's an old AC/DC song, and it came out when I was in junior high school. So you can picture a whole bunch of junior high school boys just singing that song.
Yeah.
You got to go listen to the song to say it. Like I said, that's old AC/DC there.
Okay.
My dad is now trolling me, and he said President of the United States of America.
Wow. I mean, he's got some real eclectic taste, Alan.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a band I completely forgot about.
Yeah.
I remember, like, both my parents went to the University of Florida, so we would go up to Gator games quite a bit, and at their homecoming show, Gator Growl, it was a Steve Miller Band.
That was awesome.
And so after that, like, awesome. I was show. Pretty young, but they're amazing. And Rush also, big one up there.
Well, I've seen Rush a lot. Yeah.
I've seen Rush once.
Yeah.
Twice.
I've seen them a lot, and it's a real, they're I've seen them. I mean, going the first time I saw them was in the 80s, so and I saw them all the way up to the 40th anniversary tour. So
I'm not gonna lie, I'm also a big Styx fan.
Styx is Dennis and Young, yeah. Tommy Show.
I'm definitely Styx over Kiss, I'm not gonna lie.
I am too.
Man, Coop, Alan Rubin's giving you running for your money on being a Renaissance man and a music savant.
Oh, he is. He is definitely. I mean, he was talking about 50 Cent and stuff like that.
I know, man. Dropping some hip hop, dude. It's awesome.
Right.
He'll pull out some like Blackstreet every once in a while. You never know with him.
Right. It's kind of interesting because, you know, my boys, they're all over the place too with their music too. It's kind of interesting, more so than me maybe, just because they like the newer stuff, which I'm not really into a bunch of the newer bands.
Yeah, my girlfriend has me listening to a lot of Amy Winehouse right now. I'm listening to her quite a bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just good music.
Incredible, incredible voice, man.
Yeah.
Tragic, yeah.
Yes, too bad.
I mean, a lot of people are looking at her as, you know, megastar coming up, yeah.
The talented ones die young, man. It sucks.
Yeah. You know, yeah, I mean, you mentioned, what was the best concert you guys went to? I mean, you guys mentioned a couple. Are there any other good concerts you guys went to?
AC/DC was definitely up there for one of the best concerts I've ever been to. I went to the Jay-Z Justin Timberlake concert, and that was absolutely insane.
Yeah.
I'll say the worst concert I've ever been to was Van Halen.
Really? Now, which Van Halen? I've seen both iterations of Van Halen.
I don't know if it was the speakers.
The speakers were bad. There was something wrong.
Eddie Van Halen was just wasted on his guitar solo.
Probably the case.
It could have been both. But it was just not a good concert. Doesn't matter if it was
the
sound or the band itself. But just not a good show.
We went to a decent amount of concerts growing up. We were really lucky in that way. So we got to see a lot of people that we were exposed to a lot of good music from a young age.
I know what you're saying.
Yeah, and at that same arena was where the Florida Panthers play. So that's where I found my love for hockey as well.
Oh, you're a Florida Panthers fan?
Yeah, unfortunately.
How did you guys let that coach go to Vegas?
I know.
But you got Coach Q.
Yeah, but it was you know, inside office stuff. It was, you know, people disagreeing about stuff. He was only, 20 games into the season? We were, 10-10 or whatever it was, and we just, let him go because they weren't agreeing inside the office, and then goes to Vegas. As well as Jonathan Marchessault and a couple other guys, and first season Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I mean, what a run that was. I mean, I'm a Flyers fan. We were really hoping to get Coach Q.
Yeah.
I love the guy we got. You know, Bear, you talk about, I got these bad coaches. Alain Vigneault, he's going to be a great coach for the Flyers. I love his philosophy and everything.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Q and then Dale Talon, who also came from the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
You know, They made Chicago what it was, with Patrick Kane and Taves and that run that they had for years. So hopefully they can recreate that down in South Florida.
Did you see that the one series I always loved in the NHL was the 2011 Stanley Cup? It was the 2013 Stanley Cup with the Blackhawks and the Bruins. And I remember, you know, the Blackhawks won it in Boston, and the Boston fans just really, say what you want about Boston fans, with, you know, they obviously they have it.
Take it a lot.
But, no, say what you want. They were great sports when because that was such a great – it was a six-game series, and they lost, but they really appreciated what the Blackhawks brought that year.
Coop, you could say the same thing about Philly fans.
Well, yeah.
Little Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Class act.
Yeah, they were.
Philly.
Yeah, they were. You know, I can say that, too, when you know, I'm a Giants fan, and when we had the two runs with Coughlin, the fans were behind us that year. The Eagle fans really got behind us that year, which I was surprised. I don't say all of them, but there were a lot that did.
Are you a Daniel Jones fan?
I'm an Eli fan.
Okay.
Look, Eli won two Super Bowls. I don't put
Still disillusioned, Brad. It's okay.
But here's the thing. Daniel Jones is a New York Giant now, and if he wins the job, he'll have my full support. I thought the pick was horrendous.
Okay. Obviously, Eli should still get the start, but I was curious if you supported the pick.
I didn't support the pick when it was made because basically he was picked too high, and basically you're kind of – you made a commitment to Eli, but now you pick a guy at six, you got to play him.
I mean, didn't they have another top – or another first-round pick, like 15, 16?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So they could have just drafted him there. I don't think anyone was worried about him falling or not.
They could have drafted him in the second round.
Yeah, whatever it was.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I was hearing good. I'm not a big college football guy, but the intel I heard on Daniel Jones was positive, but no one had him top 10.
Yeah.
And you can't put – like, here's the thing. You can't put him playing against these defenses right now and make any sort of any sort of conclusion. I would be surprised if they benched Eli. I think you're better off starting Eli and let him just fall out of the job in the regular season than to throw Jones into the fire. Here's the thing. There's no one who's going to pass protect either quarterback right now. So you can put Tom Brady back there and it's not going to be good.
Yeah. I mean, the Dolphins have Fitzpatrick, and then they went out and got Rosen. And I don't think Rosen's our guy, but we didn't give up too much for him, which usually the Dolphins like to, you know, trade away players for nothing. And if they ever do trade for a player, usually give away way too much. So luckily we didn't do that. But I don't think he's our guy. Everyone was saying tank for Tua. I don't think Tua's the guy either, but, you know, what do I know?
No, the concern I have is you hired a coach with no experience. He had very little experience as a coordinator. I know you got him from the Patriots, but Brian Flores didn't have – like, this was the problem the Giants had when they brought in McAdoo. I think you got to have several years as a coordinator before you go into a head coaching job.
Yeah, I mean, Gase had some experience before that. Feldman had some experience, but they are both robots. So, at least Brian Flores seems like a human being, so –
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You know, it's interesting because Gaze, I listen to a lot of New York sports radio and Philly sports radio, obviously because I have teams up there. And I mean, I just remember when there was a couple of guys up there saying, I have this bad feeling we're going to get Adam Gaze for like weeks. This one guy, Joe Beningo, he's a Jets fan on the radio. And his worst, he was like so horrified that he was on vacation when Gaze got hired and they called him up and he just ranted on the thing.
Well, that's the thing about the AFC East. We like to trade around our coaches and players a lot.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, what's your favorite sports, IQ? What's the football, hockey?
Watching live hockey is number one. Favorite.
Yes!
Favorite sport is football, but I refuse to drive an hour to watch the Dolphins lose, so I'd rather watch every game at home, see how my fantasy team is doing, and then basketball, just the Heat are the only good team that I've had in my lifetime down in South Florida. So,
Marlins.
Well, and the Marlins when Marlins. They won the Super Bowl World Series. And what was that? 03, 04?
97 and 03.
Yeah.
Do you know what the Marlins claim to fame is in baseball history?
What's that?
Only undefeated team in the playoffs.
Really?
They've never lost a playoff series.
Dolphins, only undefeated team.
Well, through the regular season.
No.
For the whole season.
They won the Super Bowl that year.
That's true.
So I'm still
holding on. We're talking about the Marino years.
No. I'm still holding on to that. That's the only way I could talk over a Patriots fan. So.
Very good. And, that's interesting. We have to get you for a hockey show with Dojo. Me, you, and Dojo once. We'll have to do a hockey show. We have trouble. My co-hosts are not hockey guys, so.
Yeah, I'm actually excited for the season.
I am too. Because I'm not looking forward to football season right now. So I'm just fast forwarding to basketball and hockey right now for the Sixers and Fly.
Yeah, Luongo retired, and then we got why am I blanking on the goalie's name? Can't remember his name, whatever. But I think he came from the Blue Jackets. Guy's a superstar. Big year for the Panthers.
As you can tell, sports is not my thing. I'm letting Brad take this part over.
Yeah. That's okay. There's no problem at all. All right. These are a couple of questions that you'll appreciate, Alec, when you watch the second half of that last week's show.
Okay.
All right. The first thing I'm going to ask is, what is your favorite type of deli meat, guys?
Oh, easy.
Ham for me.
Oh, pastrami.
Easy.
Pastrami.
Oh, you guys brought some killer pastrami in that day in the office.
Oh, yeah. Pastrami all day.
Some great deli meat at that press event that you guys hosted for us too in Vegas, man. That's the that was awesome.
Yeah.
Did you get to try everything that we had that night?
I did my darndest to try for sure.
Yeah, Chef Nicole was there serving up some pretty good food. So.
Oh yeah, that was top notch. But the deli meat you guys brought into the office that day was like.
Where are we bringing it from?
I don't remember.
It was unbelievable. I mean, it was corned beef in there. Pastrami. The pastrami was killer.
I can't remember.
I'm a big mortadella fan. So if someone can rock a mortadella, that's awesome with the pistachios in it. It's good stuff.
Very good.
By the way, have you guys ever had Lebanon bologna?
No.
You got to try it. This okay. That it's
salami cube. It's not.
No, it's bologna. it's here's the thing. It's like a hybrid. But it's got this smoky taste to it. The boar's head cut is the best cut, is what I'll say.
Okay.
I'll take a look for it. What is it again?
Lebanon bologna.
Okay, I'll take a look.
Yep. The deli counter will probably have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they sell it in the supermarkets. It's a bigger thing in the South right now.
Okay.
So yeah. Yeah.
We're in South Florida, but that's not considered the South. So.
Right. That's what. But I think you guys have enough of a – If chance of you got some of the deli meat you guys brought in, they'll have it there. But it's more popular in like this area, you know, from the Carolinas, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's not your Oscar Mayer bologna, is what I'll say. Like Bear said, it looks like salami.
Okay.
But it doesn't taste like salami.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Take it up.
Yeah. All right. Now here's this is the other one. What is your favorite fast food sandwich?
I'm a Wendy's chicken Asiago.
Yes.
Yeah, big Wendy's guy, chocolate Frosties, all day.
Oh, I'm a Shake Shack guy, all day.
$4, you can't beat it.
What was that?
$4, you can't beat it.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Shake Shack's like premium fast food.
Yeah.
I will drive for Shake Shack, okay?
Like, they don't have drive-thrus at Shake Shack, do they?
No.
Absolutely. No. Yeah, we had some debate if that qualifies as fast food. I think we concluded it does. If you don't have a drive-in, is it fast food?
What?
That was a debate on last week's show, actually. No. Because the debate came up about, is Five Guys fast food?
Yeah, no, Five Guys isn't fast food.
No.
I think it is.
No, fast food is
fast. I love me some Five
Guys. Fast food is fast because you go through the drive-thru and you pick it up.
Fine. So In and Out.
Okay.
In and Out has a drive-thru.
So. Yep. So
yeah. I've actually never had Shake Shack, but I hear it's amazing. So
it's much better than In and Out. I'd say that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, it's under. Yeah, I got to get some when I'm down in Florida next time. Actually.
Yeah.
You have some up by you. Some Shake Shack also. You have to.
We have Steak and Shake. Yeah.
Can we also talk about how Charlotte Airport's like the best airport? I know. I think we.
Yes, we did. Yes, we talked about that last time.
Because I flew back in there this past week, and it's the
nice. It's a great airport.
They have everything there, and they're
Did you go
there? It's great.
I got some like biscuit mix while I was at the Charlotte Airport last time I was there. It's pretty solid. They
have good beer in the airport.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have that Carolina barbecue place, which is in the food court.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yep. And have you got to go? You have to go to Bad Daddy's.
Bad Daddy's.
Okay. Bad Daddy's Burger Bar.
I think last time I was there, I flew from Charleston, had a layover in Charlotte, headed home. I bought so much stuff in that airport. It was ridiculous.
And someone, my friend told me that they have the best shoe shines there.
Yeah, the problem is every time I go there, in fact, I have to go get, I'm flying tomorrow to New York, and I have to go get a shoe shines there. Yeah. I'm screwed.
Yeah, you just wait until you go to the airport to get your shoe shines.
What is the worst airport that you've ever been to?
Newark.
Really?
Hands down, it's the worst airport I've ever been to.
Not O'Hare? O'Hare's like a freaking maze, man.
Yeah, O'Hare, LaGuardia, MIA. Oh, my God.
I hate Miami.
I hate MIA.
You get a workout in Miami, though, because when you leave the gate, it's like 10 miles to the exit.
Same with O'Hare.
Especially international, it takes forever out of Miami.
The problem with Newark is, here's what I'll say, is don't do an international changeover in Newark.
I'm flying to Newark next month.
Are you going international?
No.
Okay. The problem is with international is you have to go through security again.
Really?
Yes.
That makes no sense.
It makes it's they don't have it set up where you don't have to do that. Most airports do. Yeah. And when I went to Sweden, I learned that the hard way.
Yeah. LaGuardia has a lounge that you can go to the lounge before you go through security, but after security you cannot go to the lounge, which makes zero sense.
Yes. And LaGuardia right now, I'm flying into JFK tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I purposely avoided LaGuardia because they are completely like renovating that airport. It is under major.
The Delta section is great. Everything else needs to be renovated.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. It looks like the old buildings look run down. There's actually a lot of history with that. It's just they let it go. I wish they would have kept the old. They would keep the old charm to it, but that's not the case.
No. And every single time I fly out of MIA, my gate gets changed about 27 times before I find out where my actual gate is.
Yep. I'll tell you one airport I like is the Vegas airport.
That's an easy airport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an easy airport, and I have a routine. Like, when I go to Vegas, I don't gamble on the casinos, but I go into one of those smoking areas.
The little boxes,
right? And I'll get there a couple hours early, and I'll put money in the slot machines and milk it while I'm smoking cigars.
Yes.
So it's kind of it always kills the time very quickly. It seems like I could get there 2 hours early and I'm like, man, I got to get on the plane now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but they won't let you sit and loiter there. So you have to gamble.
I sit in there and I loiter. I do.
It depends. They yelled at me.
I think they yelled at me once. I walked out and just walked back in.
So you can't just smoke in there?
No.
You can. They don't check that often.
I mean, if it's empty, they're not going to bother you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's, you know, but I figured, well, I could sit. They just increased the prices of the slot machines in there, too. I mean, I used to be able to use the quarter ones. Now everything's like 50 cents in there.
The nice thing about the Vegas airport is if you fly on off days, like we normally do for the trade show, it's not busy. If you're not flying out on a Sunday, you're okay.
Yeah. No, it's true. Usually, like, and I've stopped taking red eyes out of that airport too. It's just no more red eyes for me.
We always take the red eye every single time.
Yeah, the red eyes just are brutal on me right now because I can't sleep on the plane is the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have trouble sleeping on the plane.
How young were you guys when you guys first went to Vegas? First time.
For work or
just in general?
First time we went, I was 13, so you were 10.
Yeah, something like that. We went because of IPCPR, so we did a little family vacation. So our mom took us around, did a lot of stuff, and we actually got to go into the trade show for just a little bit.
Before we got kicked out.
See what everything's about and just take a little sneak peek. See what it is that our father did at the time.
One of my things that kind of blows my mind the last couple of years in Vegas is like the amount of families that are there. And then it's like when we got out of the Alec Bradley press party, it was like, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And there's like,
you were there later than I was.
Parents rolling around with their infants and strollers and stuff. I'm like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah. It's not a family place. Like, you can do some family stuff, but it won't last. You can't do that trip twice.
Yeah, there's like aquariums and like all that kind of, you can go see shows or whatever. Yeah. But
then, you know, your kid gets an alcoholic beverage and then starts partying. Jeez. And the next thing you know, they're at a strip club. So, you know, when you're 10 years old, that the stuff doesn't always fly.
I went to Vegas for the first time. I was 28. So I was older when I went. I did go on a father-son trip to Vegas shortly after that. And the funny thing is we're walking through the casinos, right? And all these young girls are smiling at my dad. And my dad thinks they're all trying to, like, hit on him, right? And I'm like, Dad, they're pros. He's like, no, they're not. They're really into me. I said, Dad, they're pros. He goes, how do you know that? I said, well, look at that girl. She's pretending to be on her cell phone, but there's no – she's not really on her cell phone. And he's like – he goes, shit, you're right. I'm like, yeah, because they basically – that's what they do to prevent themselves from loitering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really funny. Yeah. What was the first thing that you were there for a work trip, right?
It was when I was working for IBM, we had our conference there.
Yeah.
So that's what it was. I've been going every year since 2003 for either when I was with IBM or for IPCPR. I've gone every year since 2003.
Wow. I've missed 1 year since I was 18, I think.
Yeah. Well, a couple, and I had a couple personal trips in there too. I can't handle the personal side of Vegas anymore. I've gotten too old for that. But the best thing is I went to that, you know, you talked about the fam. Like, remember it was a time that late 90s, they were trying to make Vegas family friendly. So they opened up Circus.
Treasure Island, Circus.
Yeah. I went to Circus.
They need to tear down Circus.
New York.
Yeah. Circus, I went there and it was like going to Chuck E. Cheese with slot machines. Yeah. That's what it was. I mean, this is hard. I mean, wow. And this is like 2004, 2005, and it was run down then. And it's still there.
Apparently, that's where all the locals go, is the Circus.
Yeah. Now, when I was out in Vegas this year, I went a couple of days to the mountains. I went up to Mount Charleston. Mm-hmm. A very remote, isolated area is what I'll just say. Great resort. I stayed up there for 3 days, just kind of chilling before IPCBR. I loved it so much, I booked it for the next year again.
Where did you stay for IPCBR?
The Media House.
Oh, the Media House.
We got to get you guys out to the Media House next year.
The party house.
You know, it wasn't a crazy party, though. That was the thing. Like, we didn't have people getting, like, Bellity showed up a little hammered, right? But he was already hammered when he got there. But it wasn't like people were getting, like, trashed or anything. But people were there late. Like, there were guys there till 6 a.m. Talking tobacco. I had gone to bed way before that.
Yeah, me too.
But Surgeon was up with Skip Martin at 6 in the morning, and they're still talking about tobacco.
That sounds like a Ralph thing.
Yeah. That's a late night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know tobacco's interesting, but till 6 in the morning?
No, I was falling asleep outside at like 3 a.m., and I got nervous, right, because I thought I was getting sick again. Like that's what happened when I got the blood infection. I was getting drowsy. So when I kind of got woke up, I ran inside and I took my temperature, right, because I was worried I was getting a blood infection again. And my temperature was fine.
Right. IPCPR was right after all that stuff happened, right? That was like right.
It happened right after I visited you guys in November.
Yeah,
and it was I was ignoring all the signs, and then by Thanksgiving I was in the hospital.
Jeez.
Yeah, I did a podcast, like, what was it, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And I basically – how I got through that podcast, I look at the video of that podcast, and I look at the video, a few of the videos I did even after I came back, and I look sick. It was amazing. I look at the video. It's a big difference.
Yeah.
But no, it was that's when it all when I got back from Florida from that that's when it all started. So, but no, I'm feeling good now. So,
good.
All right.
So Coop, I wanted to ask my question.
Okay.
So we kind of alluded to it earlier, guys, about your shoe game, and the hashtag shoes of IPCPR kind of takes over. Years past and everything. So, Coop and I, last year's IPCPR, not last month, but last year's IPCPR, we were sitting down with Bill Paley of La Palina. Yeah. And Bill's relaxing with us, and he's, I noticed after this transpired, the comfortable shoes he was wearing, and apparently that's like his staple. But your dad was so proud of the comfortable shoes that he was wearing that day, is that he came into the booth and he shouted from half halfway across the room. Hey, Bill, I got you one up, and he showed off, I guess, these really comfortable loafers that he had. So what are Bradley and Alex shoe game like? What's your favorite pair of shoes? What do you guys like to rock?
On a day-to-day for me, I rock Adidas because I have the flattest feet in the world, and they're super comfortable. My feet are basically 2x4s with toes. So, yeah, exactly. So day-to-day, I wear Adidas, but when I'm working, when I'm traveling, it's either Allen Edmonds or Ferragamo's for sure.
Oh, wow.
They're the only ones that make a triple E in the width. And my feet are flat, but they're also insanely wide. So I get either a double or a triple E in the width, which is one of the largest, the width. And that really helps a lot. But also, fantastic looking shoes.
Yeah. I'm usually, Ted Baker and Cole Hans. Absolutely. But that's usually like trade show or work. And then usually either Adidas or Vans on the day to day.
Bear, I know we covered this when we had them on last time, Alec and Bradley. There used to be, you guys used to distribute something called Dr. RH.
Yeah.
And you guys had a shoe shine booth, I think, 1 year at IPCBR.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I got my shoe shine there.
Yeah, that was before my time also, I think.
This is like 2010. I think this was New Orleans. I distinctly remember getting the shoe shine there.
We always like to do something a little bit different. This year, we almost had a barber at IPCPR, and that ended up not happening. But we were going to have a barber in the Alec and Bradley section of our booth. That ended up falling through, not happening. We were going to have our barber fly out for IPCPR this year. But we thought that would have been a pretty cool idea. People get their haircut while they're waiting for their appointment.
I like that. Oh, like an old school barber or just a regular barber?
Yeah, just a regular barber. Like one of my friends also smokes cigars, and that's kind of how we became friends. So, it didn't end up happening, but you know, what better way, you know, look clean and good for IPCPR, get your beard trimmed up there, you know, always good to have your beard line looking good.
Absolutely.
You know, I know you're on that game and I am too. So you always gotta have the beard and the hair, you know, looking good.
We gotta talk to your brother, man. He needs to get that filled in a little bit.
I can do it. I just choose not to because when I get to that itchy point, I shave it every single time.
There's a threshold, man. You gotta fight through it. And it'll be the best feeling in your life. I'm telling you.
I've never broken through it. I promise you that. It's like 2 weeks for me, and during those 2 weeks, I break it every time. But I will say, when I have a little fade going, I do take a straight razor to it every single day.
Yeah.
Nice. Just to clean it up.
Nice and clean. Straight razor.
Yeah. And I got an unfortunate story on my beard. I was in college. It was probably 2015. Panthers have finally made the playoffs again. First series, they're playing the Islanders. So I'm like, I'm going to grow out my beard for the playoffs. You know, just let it ride. And some really bad missed calls on the refs. We lose the series, obviously. And I go to trim my beard, and the guard falls off midway while I'm under my beard and just put a big fat line. I'm pretty, like, it's a pretty emotional thing. Bear, I think you agree that, you know, it's just part of who you are. And and then from then on, I was like, you know, I can either just do without the neck beard and do just, you know, just from the chin and up. But I was like, you know what, this is the time, rock the mustache. And let the whole thing grow back. So I was a mustache guy for 2 to 3 weeks.
Why don't you tell everyone why you grew out your beard?
Oh, and I grew out my beard in college because I had Alex's ID. Alec had a little bit of stubble. So I was like, well, if I just grow out my beard, no one will know the difference. And that thing worked perfectly for me, except for two times. But managed to get that ID back, so it worked great.
Nice.
Bradley literally grew out his beard for that reason and has lived with it ever since.
Yeah, except for the playoffs.
Except for when he accidentally shaved part of it off.
Yeah.
I've had a beard longer than I was ever clean shaven, and my mother to this day still asks me to shave. Like, she's gonna probably catch the replay of this show and be like, you know that nice Alec? He was so clean shaven and nice and wonderful and handsome. You should shave. When are you gonna shave? Never.
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 Never. With you on that, Barry.
You should just do it one day just to completely freak her out.
Mm-mm. No, man. She'll,
you will not recognize you.
One day is not worth
it. My wife wouldn't recognize me. My wife wouldn't recognize me. My wife told me, my mother asked me to shave for my wedding day, and my wife said, if you do that, I'm not walking down the aisle. So I was like, ah, yes. Winning.
My daughter's husband, yeah, she made him shave the beard.
Yeah.
He looked like Yukon Cornelius from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And then when he shaved it, he looked like Bobby Hill from King of the Hill.
King of the Hill.
Yeah, Bobby Hill.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, with a reddish hair, Bobby Hill. He's got red hair, my son-in-law.
That's an awesome show.
Oh, I love that show.
So I've been instructed through the chat to ask how you got the ID back, Brad.
Oh, who asked that question?
That was my father, obviously. So, being the good father that my dad is, he so happens to call me the next morning, and I believe that IPCPR was going to be in New Orleans the next year, or just coming up, or whatever it was, and he's like, you have an ID, right? And I'm like, well, I kind of got it taken away last night. And he's like, all right, get me the name of the bar and this and that, and we'll figure it out. And, you know, he yells at the guy, you know, you took my son's ID. He needs it to get around. Like, how do you just take someone's ID like it was actually mine? And he's like, you're going to have to go there and just figure it out. And I'm like, all right. And, you know, see the guy that took my ID. And he's like, yeah, like, I know it wasn't you, like, on the ID. Like, who was it? And I was like, oh, like, yeah, that's my brother. Like, he went to school here and blah, 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 and this and that. And he's like, oh, well, if you had just told me it was your brother, I would have given your ID right back. And I'm like, well, why would I tell you that it was my brother if I'm using it as my ID? That makes zero sense. You would have taken it away anyways. And he goes to his truck and takes me there and pulls out a, you know, huge stack of IDs and just hands it to me. And I was considering, like, you know, a little exchange. Maybe I'd just, you know, help him out for giving my ID back. But it's like, you shouldn't have taken away in the first place.
So it was actually, he took my ID, not yours.
It was my ID.
It was, my name was on.
So, yeah, my father got my ID back. But he called me the next morning asking just if I happened to have an ID, because they were going to New Orleans for the trade.
There's another funny story about that.
Or I think it was New Orleans.
With Glenn Fiddick also.
There's a lot of good stories.
So, guys, I wanted to ask you too. This is something that kind of comes up in with the culture that we live in now, and everything is text heavy, and we're all about, you know, there are a lot of these have been flying around the chat this evening. The emojis. What is your most frequently used emoji?
I'm not a big emoji guy personally, because I'm still one that I still call a lot of people, and most people are thrown off when I do, but, like, no one likes to make phone calls anymore, and that's the route I tend to go.
I like it. That's, I agree.
Nice.
This is an easy answer. The red AB.
That's a good answer.
That's the best emoji out there.
How do you get that? How do you get that emoji?
I don't know what it is, but it's awesome because it's our company. Red, Alec Bradley, got to use it on everything.
I'm going to totally look for it right now.
Yeah. Wow. It's towards the end. It's there.
Wow. Okay, it was funny. Yeah, my chat message seemed behind yours. I just saw your dad ask me about the story.
Yeah.
The idea. So mine looks like it's true. And then your dad just put a whole bunch of Alec Bradley.
Oh, there it is. Red AB. Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
Start using it, guys. We're getting it going.
I think there's a crown also, which he also uses.
Yeah, we're getting it going. Red AB.
I love it.
Whatever it is. I grab the posts. AB emoji.
We need a Lars emoji.
There aren't enough. Oh, no, there is a Lars emoji. It's just the smiley face with the cowboy hat.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's the Lars emoji.
And he uses that one too.
I bet.
And this one. He uses those two.
Yeah. Lars has his emojis.
Nice. Go ahead, Bear.
So kind of, I know we're kind of taking a break from tobacco, guys, but I do want to know what your favorite wrapper tobacco is.
Oh, that's an impossible question. Oh man, what's your favorite? I'm gonna throw that one right back at you because that is a tough question.
You know that you're absolutely right. It is a hard question. But I'd have to say that my favorite rapper is probably Sumatran.
Okay.
Sumatran.
I was gonna say for me, just because you know Blind Faith uses it and the Criollo 98 is a big part of what we do. And I think that's a characteristic that is noticed throughout our blends. So
for me,
Criollo 98 is definitely up dog.
For me, you guys are going, you know, I just went on a strain, but really whatever is growing in either the Jalapa Valley or in Trojes, because it runs through the same valley, I love using as a wrapper. Absolutely love using it. Something I want to get better at using for sure is Pennsylvania Broadleaf as a wrapper, because it's just so dominant of a flavor profile. Just being able to balance out the flavor from that Pennsylvania Broadleaf is something that I've had a lot of fun trying to just play with recently. And I did come up with a couple blends I really like from it, but that's just one I really have been enjoying playing with myself.
Pennsylvania Broadleaf is fun, but you're absolutely right. It's a really dominant profile. Mm-hmm. And if you can learn to kind of harness it and tame it and partner and pair it really well and blend it really well, it can make for a really good tobacco. Pennsylvania is a really great tobacco, just uses even in filler as well. I'd like to see someone use it as a binder as well. I think combustion would become a really hard problem with the Pennsylvania binder, because it just does not combust very well.
I was going to say, it doesn't have the burn quality of a binder.
Yeah.
It, mostly, you know, filler, you can play with it as a wrapper, but that would definitely be tough to play with as a binder. It would probably have to be a double binder with maybe some Indonesian or something like that.
You know, Ernesto's played with Connecticut Broadleaf binders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the New World Reserver, I think, uses a Broadleaf binder.
I think we were looking at Connecticut Broadleaf as a potential for Gatekeeper at one point and ended up straying away from it.
It'd be interesting. Like, yeah, it has the same kind of characteristics. It doesn't burn well. You'd have to kind of pair it with something else. Mm-hmm. But that it's, it, I mean, the world of tobacco is so great. You can kind of just, you can do a lot of interesting things, but it's important that you can't, it's important to, like, this is a great lesson in the fact that, like, when people are like, oh, I like this tobacco and I like this tobacco, you should do this, this, and this. And it's like, well, you can't just throw this all together and then bam, something happens, because like we just talked about with Pennsylvania, it just doesn't have the combustion rate that a lot of other tobaccos do. That, because the binder is so important, it's often overlooked. Most people talk about, obviously, wrapper dominates any conversation, as it did with my question.
Yeah.
But then binder and then filler kind of gets a lot of attention, because you can put a lot of different components in the filler. Binder gets overlooked a lot, but it's incredibly important.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the cigar doesn't burn well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's why we like Coop said before, that double binder is kind of one of our signatures, because it adds a little bit more complexity to the blend and more flavor. So just doing that can add a lot more to the cigar's performance overall.
I'm a big Honduran tobacco guy, and because when Honduran tobacco is on, it's really good. Yeah. It's a very polarizing to me, so like, sometimes it could be very off, but I do really like, and I love what you guys did with that Magic Toast Maduro. Yeah. I mean, it's a Honduran wrapper.
When you can get some good Trojes or some good Hamastron that you're playing with in a blend, it can really bring it together. Because I find that there's a certain sweetness that you can get from Honduran tobacco that Nicaraguan doesn't always have. And it really brings out a certain characteristic in the cigar that I really enjoy.
Yeah, and I think for us also at Alec Bradley, we have a little bit of a more personal connection with making cigars in Honduras and using Honduran tobacco. You know, as you know, Prensado being the only number one cigar to come out of Honduras,
And just kind of the whole community in Don Lee where Rice is Cabanas is and helping them grow and then them helping us grow. It's important for us to make cigars that come out of Honduras. And so, you know, I've fallen in love with tobacco. I think someone who's making great Honduran cigars is Oscar. I think he's really doing a good job promoting Honduran tobacco and what it could really bring to the table as, you know, as well. So that's kind of, you know, how even
those Aladinos are.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well,
that's a pure Honduran.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Gabby Caffey also making really good stuff out of Honduras. So
he breathes, he lives and breathes.
Honduras. Yeah. He loves the Honduran tobacco. So there's, you know, everyone obviously always talks about Dominican and Nicaraguan being those are the top two places where cigars were made, but we're pretty proud of Honduras and what they bring to the table.
And like I said, the Trojas wrapper, you guys really put that on the map. I mean, there's no question Ali probably put that wrapper on the map. You've used it on some amazing blends. I mean, the Fine and Rare uses it, I believe, right? And yeah. And the Mundial. I mean, so you guys, you guys have really put that on them, and of course the Blind Face, which I'm smoking right now. It's a beautiful wrapper in terms of texture as well. That you guys seem to get with that, yeah. I mean, you look at this Blind Face; it's beautiful.
The Mundial is overall my favorite like overall brand that you got Alec Bradley makes. But the Brad and I were talking about the Coyol Petit Lancero.
Oh, I mean,
there's something about that Mundial No. 4, the No. 5. Mm-hmm. It's such a refined cigar. And for people that haven't tried it, I think when they do smoke it, it is a very different experience just because of how refined those flavors are.
Mundial is very creamy, and that's something that's very unique. When you think about Honduran tobacco, just in essence, cream is not a flavor profile that you get out of it, but Mundial coaxes out of it with the rest of the blend in a very, very pronounced way that just makes for a tremendous cigar all around. I love every single Vitola. That brand is still one of my favorites.
And that's one I gravitate to the smaller sizes in that blend I've found. Normally, like I said, I kind of gravitate medium to larger ring. But that one I really like the smaller size. They just are real flavor bombs, those things.
Yeah, that was the first cigar to ever put me on my ass.
It's a stronger cigar, yeah. And that Figurado, I love that shape of the Figurado as well. It's I wish there were more cigars like that in the market, but it again kind of gives you guys a place with something very unique as well.
Yeah.
All right, guys, settle a debate for Coop and I. It'll never be settled because it'll just constantly be a fight, but we settle something for us. So I'm not going to tell you, we'll tell you afterwards after we hear your answers, but we're not going to tell you up front. But if you guys have watched the show, you probably know where we fall on this. The Tatuaje Monster Series.
Oh.
One of the longest running series that you could probably imagine and that, you know, is, you know, kind of a seasonal release, rather, over the years. Is the Tatuaje Monster Series a gimmick?
No, absolutely not, in my opinion.
No.
I think it's like you said, it's a series. So he came up with something, it did well, and he continued with it. He's doing something different within the industry, and an industry that has very little innovation in the first place. He tried to do something different and it stuck, and I commend him for that. And I definitely don't find that to be gimmicky. I see what you might say in terms of it being gimmicky, but for me, no. I think it's just a very smart series that he came up with and people have gravitated toward.
Yeah, and I would also digging a little, I would say no as well, because the cigars are fantastic. The Kruger, best one.
The most overlooked one. I think it's the most overlooked of the monsters, yeah.
The best one.
I just bought Brad a box of
the Brides.
Of the dress box of the Brides.
Yeah. So the Monster Series, well, the packaging, if you want to say, could be a little gimmicky because it plays off of some of our favorite movies and stuff like that. That's okay. But the bands, as Pete does, are always simple. So, and the cigars, it's not like the cigars look, you know, gimmicky or whatever. So the cigars perform, and that's really what matters. But gimmicky goes along with the same thing as like boutique, like what is a gimmick and what's not a gimmick. if a cigar looks gimmicky but is just a good cigar, is it still a gimmick?
Yeah, I agree with that. If a cigar looks gimmicky and it's not good, then I might consider it a gimmick. But if it seems maybe on the cusp, but it's a great smoking cigar, I'm absolutely fine with it.
Those are absolutely the right answers. It is not a gimmick.
Coop looked defeated.
All I know is that Pete Johnson agreed with me it was gimmicky.
Well, Pete is wrong about his own cigars.
No, he's not. He said it's gimmicky. I asked him. He said absolutely they're gimmicky, he said.
No.
But he also said he made gimmicky cigars cool. So
he said they're gimmicky. He didn't say it was a gimmick.
Yes.
A little gimmicky.
Some ish.
Gimmick-ish.
Oh, that's a technicality there.
Technicality that works. It's not a gimmick. Absolutely right answers, gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you very much. And good night. Good night.
by the way, the Bride, if you guys haven't smoked the Brides lately, they have been aging really well, like in the last 10 months.
Yeah.
Them if they're a gimmick, though, Coop? What are you talking about?
I didn't say I don't smoke gimmicky cigars. Look, I saw a cigar today that came out. It's called a peanut butter cookie. That's all I'm going to tell you. That's extremely gimmicky.
Did you smoke it?
No. I got an email on it. I'm not going to – a peanut butter cookie is all I'm going to say, no.
Yeah. I'm sure people would say our Filthy Hooligan and Shamrock is a gimmick, but I smoked the Filthy Hooligan on a daily morning basis, actually until we ran out. So that ended. But I love Filthy Hooligan, and it might be a gimmick, but it smokes like a champ.
Dude,
gimmicks don't work, so the Filthy Hooligan doesn't qualify as a gimmick. It's not a gimmick.
Would you say Texas Lancero was gimmicky?
No, it was a play on words.
It's just a big cigar.
Yeah,
it's a good cigar. Actually, it was blended for that size. I liked it.
It was absolutely blended for that size. It's a play on words. It's a little tongue in cheek, and I don't really consider it a gimmick. It's just a large cigar with a funny name.
I love the ads that your dad did for that cigar. You know, he was at a biker bar or whatever, and he's got all these guys like Hell's Angels all around and stuff. And he's sitting there lighting up this Texas Lancero. Awesome, awesome marketing. Loved it.
Yeah, and it was like he was sitting on like a Honda 1000, like 1000, 2000, whatever it was, this little motorcycle around all these guys with, you know, choppers and Harleys and all this stuff, just kind of saying it's okay not to fit in sometimes.
Alan says, collectible, yes. Gimmicky, no way.
Yes, and Alan is right as well.
I'm just saying what Pete told me.
Pete is wrong about his own cigars, and it's okay. We forgive Pete. It's okay. All the respect in the world for that.
By the way, Pete was not happy with the Impossible Whopper today.
So are we going to get into, like, the whole boutique and stuff now? Is that where this conversation is leading?
We could, yeah.
Because we could be here for
what makes a boutique?
Oh, boy.
What makes a boutique?
I was actually texting with Eric from Dojo about that today. Because we won Cigar Wars or whatever it was, and they put that Alec Bradley was a corporate company. And I tried to correct them, and they did not agree.
Okay, so
I would say that Alec Bradley is not boutique. I would say that Alec and Bradley is boutique.
So
what makes it?
I wouldn't say corporate though. I think I agree with you on that. I think that's an unfair characterization or a misleading characterization, because corporation to me is kind of like General, Altidus, even Davidoff to a certain extent. You know, Alec Bradley doesn't qualify as corporate. I would say that Alec Bradley doesn't necessarily qualify as boutique, but Alec and Bradley definitely does.
So what's in between boutique and corporate then? Because that seems to be the only two.
See, I think there's three lines of demarcation there. I think there's boutique. I think there's non-boutique, and then I think if you wanted to go above to a higher level, I think then that's corporate. But I don't think Alec Bradley qualifies as corporate.
Let me give you my take on this, because I have a different take. I got into a debate with Jonathan Drew on this years ago over my definition of boutique, and I was putting in things about the size of the company, the production level, and Jonathan took a lot of exception when I said Drew Estate was not a boutique company, right? He feels that it comes down to the culture and the core competencies that make a company boutique, and he uses the words boutique is in the heart. I agree with that, and that's why I would put – he convinced me on it. That's why I'd put you guys, from what I've seen of your culture, and you're not a huge company. Yeah, I went in the office. You're bigger than, let's say, the one-man show small company, but there's a culture in there. I'd say it's very boutique-ish in there. So that's kind of what
I think culture is important from any company standpoint, and I think that it does have to do with production level. And like I said, I think that there's a different line of demarcation in saying something is corporate. Again, I would not say that Alec Bradley is corporate. Far from it. But I think that there's
a
definitive characterization between boutique and non-boutique. I think it has to do with size. It has nothing to do with the production quality or the type of production that's being done, or even the culture, because the comparison that just popped into my head of, and I'm not even sure about the numbers game of it, but like another kind of comparison is CLE, Christian Iroha. So CLE, I don't think is a boutique brand, but I think Asylum is. Mm-hmm.
So I look at beer and, you know, the definition of craft or whatever it may be. You look at a company like potentially Dogfish Head, and I would call them a craft beer company 100%. They may have been bought by Sam Adams, whatever it may be, but the way they're producing their beer and everything behind it and their company culture, in my opinion, makes them craft. And that's how I kind of view us as well.
Yeah, but if we're painting the same kind of line of comparison with beer, like I think that there's two distinct, I think that there's three distinct lines in the cigar industry where there are two distinct lines in beer. I don't think that there's like I think there's craft and there's non-craft. Anheuser-Busch, Sam Adams, to InBev is huge. So Budweiser, those types of just they're monsters, they're monstrosities, they're non-craft. And then
buying craft breweries. So
right, exactly. So, but I think that those companies, but much like Alec and Bradley, or even Lars Teton to that effect, those are boutique companies under a non-boutique brand of Alec Bradley. But Alec Bradley is still not corporate. They're not InBev. That's not. I think there are three distinct lines in the cigar industry where there are two distinct lines in beer. I don't think there's.
We have the same initials as InBev, but not InBev.
Right. Exactly. So. I think there's three distinct lines of characterization because as far as boutique, I think where Jonathan, and I don't want to put words in Jonathan Drew's mouth, but I think where Coop's discussion with Jonathan, where Jonathan may have taken exception to characterizing them as non-boutique, is that he had built that company much like your father did from the ground up, and it was boutique when it first started. You know, it was smaller. They were doing lower production numbers, and company culture. He was able to take that company culture and build it, expand it, and that's to his credit.
For you, it's production numbers then.
Yes, for me, it's definitely production
numbers. I changed that whole opinion after he talked to me on that, and from someone who works in the corporate world, and I've worked in corporate America for 30 years, I could tell you. You guys are boutique from that definition. If you take that definition of it, I'm not saying your definition's wrong, but I kind of saw what the angle he was going. And Alan, by the way, agreed with JD's assessment on that too.
Yes. So is Tatuaje boutique?
No,
definitely. Yes.
So I was talking to Pete about this as well at Cigar Fest, and you know, he's like, yeah, people have pushed me out of the category of boutique. And I was like, I don't get that. I think a lot of people would agree that, and it may be different here, that Illusion and Viaje are boutique. And I've heard that it's based on the blends and the packaging and the numbers and this and that. But a lot of Illusions and Viaje's cigars are coming out of Rice Cubanas, the same place that our cigars are coming out of. And so someone may categorize them as boutique, but won't categorize us as boutique.
Yeah, Rice.
But we're all making cigars from the same place with tobacco. We're all
using. That's a great point, because Rice is a boutique. It would be considered a boutique factory.
Sure.
Yeah, and Alan is emphatic on this, that he's 100% boutique. I'm supporting him on this.
So, like, you asked if Pete was like, so Tatawahe, again, if you're finding my line of trade of thought is that Tatawahe is not boutique, but L'Atelier and Surrogates are.
Okay. I see your point.
I would say that I wouldn't even say that my father is corporate.
Yeah.
But they're definitely not boutique either.
I see what you're saying. That
I think my father is a different story. I don't think they're boutique.
Yeah,
I think the culture's changed. I think they grew into a bigger company is what happened.
So yeah. I don't know their numbers, but AJ Fernandez as a brand, are they boutique?
No.
As a brand, not as a fact. As the AJ Fernandez.
So like San Latano.
San Latano, yeah. Ramon. Yeah.
That's a really close one.
That's a tough one.
That's why
I threw it out there. That's a hard question.
That's a tough one.
I think if you take AJ the Enterprise, you could say no. I mean, you could say he's a, but you take AJ the brand.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this is interesting stuff.
But I'll say you're not corporate. I'll say you guys are definitely not a corporate company.
Definitely not. Like I said, there's a very distinct line of, for me, there's very
serious. We need to create a third term.
So everyone call Eric after this. Tell him to change that, not to corporate. Just say not corporate, even if it says corporate, just not corporate.
Not corporate, not boutique.
Yeah. Let's all call Eric right after this.
Yeah. Like I said, JD kind of changed my opinion on that a bit. There's certainly, like I said, I think there's cultural things you can apply there. And certainly Drew Estate, maybe there's some changes now that they're part of a bigger corporation. They have some processes in place right now. I think they've tried, when it comes to the cigar making piece, to keep that culture, at least with the cigar making. And Swisher's left them alone, I think, for the most part, and let them kind of be creative.
Yeah, which makes Drew Estate non-boutique and not corporate. They're owned by a corporation, but they're
owned by a corporate, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what makes it distinct for me. So like,
there really isn't
that line of demarcation when you talk about with Altadis brands or general brands, you know. So like Trinidad, for example, we were talking about earlier, isn't boutique. No, they're corporate because they're part of the corporate structure.
Yeah.
You know, Drew Estate in his own entity is non-boutique because of production members. But they're definitely not corporate because of, you know, if you want to throw in the argument of culture.
So then what was Room 101 when it was part of Davidoff?
Boutique.
I looked at it boutique because what I looked at it is Matt had a brand. He owned the brand. He contracted with Davidoff for production and he used their distribution. But as far as the brand goes, it was still boutique.
Yeah. I think I like Barry's definition because it goes a little bit more in depth.
I like what he's saying.
On group side.
I like what he's saying, but yeah, it's like I said, there's very few boutique companies under my definition, though, or the JD definition. Then you can make an argument like 80 to 90% of the companies. You could probably find 6 or 7 companies that are not boutique.
Yeah.
So then what would the what would consumers consider? What do you think consumers would consider it?
You guys? I still think
us.
I think consumers don't think you guys are boutique, believe it or not. But I think and I think there's a little bit of a stigma with that. That's not your fault. I mean, you guys. I think once I'm gonna get in trouble for saying this. Once you start getting a lot of press from aficionado, it's tough for that line for consumers. Like I said, folks of all the industry can see the difference, but I think from consumers they don't see the difference, and they may still put you guys in as a big company.
That's absolutely dead on accurate, Coop, from the consumer perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think Alec and Bradley and Larstein's are considered boutique, but Alec Bradley lies somewhere in the middle.
Correct.
Yeah.
The way I see it, yes.
Yeah, I think consumers also see it as like a availability as well. Like if you can find it in most stores, or you can find a lot of the stuff online, then maybe it's not boutique. But if you got to search a little bit harder for it, maybe it is boutique. But yeah, I like Bear's definition. I'm gonna go with you.
I think we could have drawn that out for an hour and a half if we really wanted.
We could have.
Oh my gosh,
we could.
We'd be here for a while.
Yep.
So three lines of demarcation when it comes to boutique, and the Monster Series is not a gimmick. Perfect.
All right. That's good. All right. Bear, anything else we want to hit?
I'm good.
All right. Hey, guys, before we kind of wrap up, first I want to thank you guys for taking time. I know it was a long show. We did go 3 hours. We do appreciate that. You guys heading over to Interstate back at all?
I'll be there.
Nice. So safe travels there as well.
Thank you.
Quick programming note. No show on Thursday. Aaron's going to be at the Rocky Mountain Cigar Festival. I'm heading up to New York tomorrow, and then I'm going to be doing a weekend up in Rhode Island for a couple of days. So I'm going to be out of town for the rest of the week, so we won't have a show. We'll be back on the 29th with Primetime Episode 107 with Luis Cuevas. And I guess I'll announce this right now. Episode 108 will be Nick Perdomo.
Yeah.
Yep, that is yep. So we have that as well. So, so you want to stay tuned for that? That is just hot off the presses there as well. But guys, yeah, thanks so much. Hopefully I'll see you guys down in Florida at some point. So I'm gonna be making a couple more trips down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
thanks for having us as always, and safe travels to New York tomorrow.
Yeah, Bear Coop, really appreciate it, guys. Yeah.
Appreciate you guys.
Yeah, Bear, real quick, you got anything on Sunday coming up?
Oh, absolutely. I've got a boutique brand on Sunday. I've got Mr.
Dr. Bradley.
I'd love to have you guys on the show. I have Kurt Kendall of 724 Cigars for taking.
Yeah.
There you go. And Kurt's going to be on Primetime in November. So,
Kurt, we say hi.
Yeah.
Well, yep. Great. Great cigars. All right, guys. Thanks again. That's going to wrap up Primetime Special Edition number 59 into the annals of history for Tuesday, August 20th, now Wednesday, August 21st on the East Coast. We will see everybody a week from Thursday. Have a great night, everybody.
We'll see you next time.
See you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.